This episode of Shockwaves is sponsored by Universal Studios' Halloween Horror Nights in Hollywood. Immerse yourself in a living, breathing, three-dimensional world of terror. Now through Saturday, November 5th. Visit them online at halloweenhorrornights.com/Hollywood to learn more about the event and buy tickets.
Welcome to episode 19 of Elric's.
Yeah,
like, hi, Elric. You want to join us today?
Oh, hi.
Turk's on his phone over here.
Oh, my God. Look at this. Okay.
Hey, guys, let's do a show.
We're here. Everybody, wake up. Okay?
You only missed the best guest ever last week, Turk.
I listened in. Although my highlight of last week's episode was you calling Becca, like, Sneezalopolis or something.
Sneezalopolis.
I don't know what it was. We don't even remember that.
Listen,
I don't want to pull.
You introduced her as something Sneezy McSneezy.
I don't mean to pull the curtain back, but we may have started over last week because of a sneezing fit.
I had like a crazy sneezing fit at the top of the show. Like, I'm surprised I didn't break bones.
Like, oh,
I'm
sorry.
Then we had to restart.
Thank you for recognizing. I wasn't there last week. I appreciate that.
So, hi, I'm Rob Galuzio from Blumhouse.com. Sitting with me is Elric Kane, Diet Coke drinker.
That's it.
All around good guy.
That's all he's got going for him.
All around, I don't know.
Diet Coke and he's good people.
No, I'm all right.
And Becca McKendry.
Hello.
Editor-in-chief of our website.
What up?
Head of development, the man, the myth, the legend, Ryan Turek.
Hello, hello.
Returning.
I'm back.
Returning.
Back from Austin.
So we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to have a fun topic to kind of tackle that we've never done on either show before. But before all that, we have to start the top of the show. Unfortunately, the news came out that Herschel Gordon Lewis is no longer with us, the godfather of gore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's, everyone's got a little bit of history mm-hmm. with him because his films are definitely a unique subgenre.
Acquired taste
in a unique subgenre in horror. And I don't know. I think it's interesting. Everybody I talked to discovered his work in a completely different way in a different time period. For me, it was much later on, but Becca, I know you had a little bit of history with him from the Fango Sirius Radio days.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, you should go back to Becca's Facebook page and check out the photo she put online of her and Herschel Gordon Lewis, because I was like, who's that with Herschel Gordon Lewis?
That was a younger, slightly plumper me, but and wearing
who's
that.
Who's that?
I was wearing this sweater in it. This is the...
not Mistress Becca, though.
I was wearing this sweater in it that made me look like a pepper. Peppermint drop, if you notice, is like pink and red. Anyway, Dave was making fun
of
it all night.
I'm giving you shit because I love you.
That's my kind of mistress.
But I discovered Herschel Gordon Lewis like way too early because he was one of my like video finds, like going through video stores early on where I would look at the covers. And I wrote about this on the site, how the cover to Color Me Blood Red like terrorized me, but I couldn't stop staring at it to the point that I finally got up the nerve to rent them. And then after I rented that one, I moved on to 2000 Maniacs. And then I like binged watched all of them. And this is while I was probably like maybe eighth or ninth grade. And they were really accessible to me because his gore, I had not gotten to Gore Girls by this point, which is not quite accessible to somebody that young. But things like Blood Feast and 2000 Maniacs and things like that, the
Wizard of Gore,
it's so over the top and so campy and so just caricatures, but I thought it was hilarious. And it would shock me enough to go, oh my God, but it wasn't real enough to disturb me. And I ended up seeing She-Devil's on Wheels really young too, which is just, you know, it's like a weird feminist film. Actually, a female screenwriter on that one. Gordon didn't write that one. But yeah, some really fascinating stuff. And then I ended up, he came on Fangoria Radio when I was doing some assistant production stuff for them. He came on Fango Radio when I was doing some assistant production stuff for them. And he was just like, you know, Herschel Gordon Lewis from his work. And then when he entered the elevator and I was picking him up and going upstairs with him, he was just so grandfatherly and just so excited to be there. And I've told the story before, but he offered me a Werther's and I was just like, that's so adorable. And he was just the nicest man. And then I've kept in touch with him throughout the years just because my academic work was all focused on grindhouse filmmaking. And so anytime I was doing something on marketing, I would email him and ask him, like, he was my go-to interview for everything academic I was doing. And so, yeah, it really was hard for me on Monday, just because he's been very helpful.
Yeah.
Throughout my entire academic process.
Yeah. And he was always pretty open in terms, like, you know, anytime we reached out on Icons of Fright to either chat with him about something, he's always kind of open to, you know, doing whatever. And, you know, I mean, he was such a showman. And I think that's one of the biggest things I take away from his films is hearing his stories of how he toured them and really, you know, thinking about the audience mm-hmm. and how they were going to react because there was an audience for this kind of stuff.
Well, there's a great book out there by Jason Zinnemann called Shock Value, mm-hmm. and it talks about the importance of what H.G. Lewis brought to horror, because up until the point of, you know, his films being released, it was kind of not sanitized horror, but old horror. Mm-hmm. It was Hammer horror. It was Universal horror. It was stuff like that. And then in came this guy who kind of, it was a DIY kind of effort in terms of both distribution and filmmaking. And then he was also adding, kicking up the level of blood and bloodshed that people were seeing on screen, you know, because Hammer had brought, that was the whole thing with Hammer horror and Universal horror. Universal horror was black and white. Hammer horror was color and blood and sex. And then H.G. Lewis is like, I'm going to pull some guts out of this blonde girl.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I saw it too. Was, you know, as a kid growing up in Connecticut and going to the video store, his section, his shelf was like, no, like I couldn't, that was off limits. I couldn't look at any of that stuff, but I still snuck over there and looked at it. When I would look at the gory images and some of the kind of insane stuff that was on the back of the box art, it obviously, like many things that you conjure up in your head, so much bigger and mm-hmm. so much more violent and so much more, I guess, meaner. And I was just kind of like, when I finally got around to seeing these movies, I was like, nobody operates this way in the real world. Yeah. Everything was just so over the top and campy. I guess it was a little bit tamer than I expected, even though it's super grotesque, because mm-hmm. then you start seeing, you know, the kind of the seams to the gore and seams
it's
to that
like
stuff.
It's like the opposite of what Greg McLean kept talking about, grounding.
Right, right.
It's not grounded at all.
No. Yeah.
But what you see is visceral, but yeah. in a silly way. I was the most proud thing about Jump Cut was the day, night I opened it, I put up all the director pictures, and it was so important for me to put him next to Spielberg. Like I said, I want to run the kind of place where there's a picture of Spielberg next to a picture of Herschel Gordon Lewis and then like Robert Altman. Like to me, that would be a coup. And the first person to recognize that it was Herschel, because it was him very young. And that's why it was such a cool photo, is him looking through a long lens. He looked maybe 40 or 35. And the only person, of all the initial people who came through Jump Cut, I'd say, I'll give you something free if you know who that is. Becca was the only one who got it right. And that's why I gave her
the
wall.
He gave me that photo off the wall and signed it when Jump Cut closed.
Yeah, when we closed. But I will say one really fun story. I might have told you this before, but I was working at Facets in Chicago, and you don't meet celebrities in Chicago because not really, not that often in a video store. And this old guy would always come, and he really liked my pics, and he was probably like 80. And he would always want whatever the most art house title was. Like it had to be like the slowest film, the better. Never horror film ever. And one day I'd like served him. We had this long conversation. My coworker goes, I can't believe he was the star of Gore Gore Girls. And I was like, what? And so I look up his name, which is Frank Kress. And I look him up and he's the freaking lead of Gore Gore Girls. And he just happens to live in Chicago, goes to the video store. So after that, it was all different. I'd get all the stories that I could get out of him. And he's just a very, you know, very fun guy.
But. Wow.
I do have to say there are two Lewis films that I always have to bring up to people just because they get kind of forgotten. But I think that they're really important, where he did all of these like gory, crazy, over the top ones that everybody knows about. But then in the late 60s, he did one called The Girl, The Pill, or The Girl, The Body, and The Pill, which is about, and it sounds like it's going to be a sexy setup. It's about a teacher who's teaching sexploitation that gets kicked out of school, so she starts doing private lessons at her home. Sounds like it's going to get crazy, right? It is a crazy statement on the use of birth control pill and the importance of sex education, and it does not get sexy.
Wow.
It is insane.
So it sounds like a must-see.
It sounds like real heavy, guys.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's exploitation. It's not, it's still exploitation. It's still shot like an exploitation film, but at the end of it, you're like, wow, this really had a statement. And the same with Year of the Yahoo, which is his political satire about this country music star who decides that he's really popular, so fuck it, he's going to run for Congress, and he does. But as soon as he gets to Congress, he realizes that everybody in politics are evil and sinister and backstabbing, even in his own cabinet. And it's the same way where it's kind of shot like an exploitation film, but you're watching it the whole time going, this is really smart. Yeah. I wasn't expecting it. So I have to mention those too, just because most people don't really connect them with him.
Yeah. Well, a lot of these guys, I mean, they're all hyper intelligent human beings, you know? I mean,
and
like,
he's a businessman.
And he's a businessman. That's the thing. It's like a lot of them, everybody tries to, as a filmmaker, everybody tries to filter their own themes and views through specific means, whether it's, for a mainstream audience or not, remains to be seen. But, you know, he seemed to be very intelligent and very smart. And, you know, he just filtered his, what he liked weird
shit. If you didn't see it. And these are guys who are filling, that was a time where there wasn't enough product for the screens.
Exactly.
The demand. Yeah. Now we're the opposite.
Right.
So we have all product too and much. Not as much demand. Or, who knows where to put it.
So. Yeah. I met him once over breakfast and I didn't know who he was at the time. And it's one of those like unbelievable, this was like early 2000s, probably around 2002, because that's when Blood Feast 2 was coming out. And I had won from some horror website a trip to Flashback Weekend in Chicago. First year they ever did it. So the very, very first one. And as part of the VIP package, you got to go to breakfast with the guests, which were like the ladies of Evil Dead and all that stuff.
I
sat on the bus with Betsy Baker from Evil Dead and Tom Sullivan, the guy that did the original book and everything.
Cool.
And we're like chit-chatting about like, you know, movies and comic books and all that stuff. And then we sit at a table and obviously Bruce comes in, like I'm sitting next to this older gentleman who looks like grandpa and everyone seems to be like, you know, kind of in awe of him and listening to his stories. I have no idea who he is. And then Bruce comes over and makes a joke at my behalf as usual, because that's the way Bruce is. But he's like, oh, hey, Herschel. And they started chit-chatting. I was like, oh, Herschel Gordon Lewis. That's who that is. Hmm. So it wasn't until much, much later when after that experience where I went back and kind of like figured out who he was. And I was like, oh, I remember these covers for these movies, but I just never saw them back on video and kind of discovered that stuff. And then, you know, I think it was mid to late 2000s, people started to remake his properties.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy Kasdan did Wizard of Gore.
Tim Sullivan
did
the 2000
Maniac. So, so, you know, Something Weird Video usually put out all this stuff. There's actually some fairly inexpensive Blu-rays that collect, like there's a double feature and there's one that had called the Blood Trilogy that has three of them together. So, if you want to take that plunge and discover some of them,
and actually
it's possible.
Something Weird label and their logo is taken from the Herschel Gordon Lewis movie, Something Weird, which is really
the
trippy. Elric, you would like that one.
Yeah, no, I know that one. That's a cool one.
Yeah.
So yeah, buy some cow tongue, cook it up, raise a glass in his honor.
Yep.
Here's to Herschel.
Yeah.
Moving on.
So there's a lot to talk about. Well, first of all, why don't we check in with Ryan regarding Fantastic Fest.
Yeah.
You were missed last week, but we were hoping you'd come back and report some new
films.
Well,
maybe next year we can try to get the whole crew down there for a recording in the lobby at the Alamo Drafthouse. Fantastic Fest was actually really, really solid this year. There were a couple festivals I attended that I was kind of disappointed by the films that were programmed. But started out really strong on Thursday night by seeing Park Chan-wook's The Handmaiden.
Ooh.
Denis Villeneuve, The Arrival. Well, yeah. Not The Arrival, but Charlie Sheen. Arrival.
Even though that movie's badass.
I do love The Arrival. Arrival is a really solid movie, man.
Yeah, that's what
it's a, it's a really good, heady sci-fi movie. And I feel like it's Eric Hissier's best script. This is the writer of Nightmare on Elm Street remake, The Thing prequel, A Final Destination. You know, I mean, he's been in the trenches, and you know, I think pairing him up with Denny was like one of the best things that could ever happen. But really, really smart sci-fi. Handmaiden, Park Chan-wook's movie, bonkers, insane, beautiful, probably my best, unless something comes along that blows me away. It's so far, it's my favorite and best film of the year. Amazon Films is putting it out late in October. I don't want to talk too much about it. It's hyper gorgeous, sexual, Coen Brothers-esque in its narrative a little bit. It's insane. It's probably my favorite thing that he's done too.
Cool.
Really, really mature work and funny and engaging and, you know, thrilling and not too many horror elements at all.
Better than Stoker?
Yes. Wow. Actually, I think that the character that's in The Handmaiden is kind of an evolved form of India from Stoker.
Okay.
Like, you could almost take her and drop her into this movie, or they could be like long lost sisters. Hmm. And then I kind of dove into the horror stuff, and on the horror front, there was a great Irish film called A Dark Song that is basically, the setup is, woman buys a mansion out in the sticks. She hires this foul-mouthed, belligerent occultist to help her talk to her dead son. And basically, it's less about the outcome and more about the process. How do you go about doing that? And as an occultist, he's like, okay, I'm going to take over your mansion for this, you know, 3-week, hour-long period and put symbols and carvings and all these little things. And basically, he forces her through a process in which she sits in the middle of these like circles. And he's like, in this circle, you're going to face this. In this circle, you're going to face this. I'm going to pour water on you for like 5 hours straight. You're not going to sleep. You're going to have to chant over and over. And through the process, you know, their relationship becomes a little intense. And there's a couple twists and turns along the way.
So it's a procedural. We never get a procedural.
It is really cool. It's really, really cool. Another film that
was Dark Sun?
A Dark Song.
Yeah. Okay, Dark Song.
That keeps the Irish streak going. They've been putting out some good films last year.
Yeah, no, and it's really, it's super contained. The performance is really solid. And then it gets really bonkers in the end. Like, cool. The last 10 minutes are really, really terrifying. And then another film that kind of took me off guard, is called, Sweet, Sweet Lonely Girl. And Sweet, Sweet Lonely Girl is directed by A.D. Calvo, who, I found out over the weekend by meeting him and talking with him a little bit. He's actually from my hometown of Wallingford, Connecticut. He still lives there. And the only reason I brought it up is because when I was watching the film, I was like, I recognize all these Connecticut locations. Some of them looked like they were in my hometown. Some of them looked like they were outside, but, it is the best way I can describe it is you go to a bookstore and you're looking at like 70s pulp novels for like teenage girls, and you pull one off the shelf and it's like a spooky tale. And it's like frayed around the edges. You could a beautifully painted cover of a girl with like a candle, you know, walking down a dim hallway. That's kind of like the feeling it evokes, you know? And it's about a girl who has to go care for her aunt, her elderly aunt, who never comes out of her room, only leaves her notes by slipping them under the door. And it's got a 70s vibe. And it owes quite a bit, I feel like, in tone to – people are going to draw a lot of analogies to House of the Devil in terms of pacing. My go-to is Let's Scare Jessica to Death. It's super, super cool and super creepy. And while the girl is like living in this Victorian home all by herself with her aunt, she winds up meeting another girl and they have a relationship, and then things kind of spiral out of control from there. But super quiet, you know, creepy, eerie little flick. And I there was something about it where like halfway through, it was like, I think I'm kind of falling in love with this movie. And then it kept going and I was like, No, this is definitely the kind of stuff I dig. You know, it's the same kind of love affair I have with February.
Yeah.
In fact, February and Sweet, Sweet Lonely Girl, or I should say the Black Coat's Daughter, are great pairings, like wine. Wow. You know, cool. You just pair the two together.
It's right up your alley then.
Yeah, it's like really, really solid. I saw Mike Mendez's Don't Kill It.
Oh, with Dolph Lundgren.
Perfect, a perfect setting for a movie. It's a fantastic film. It's a fantastic fest. Dolph is hilarious. You know, and this is another Mike Mendez special in terms of like, you know exactly what you're getting into. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like watching it, it's less big ass spider Mike Mendez and more convent Mike Mendez.
Oh, nice.
You know, where it's just like madcap violence. I mean, like the first 5 minutes, there's so much bloodshed, it's ridiculous.
Has that been picked up?
I don't think so. I don't know. I don't know. And then another film I saw is something called Belief, The Possession of Janet Moses, Elric. This is a New Zealand tale.
Oh, really?
It is about the true case of this woman named Janet Moses, who came from a Maori family. And it's a documentary. And most of it's told in reenactments. And basically what had happened was Janet Moses started to exhibit signs of just depression and, you know, isolation, and Maori family super tight knit. And what the family wind up doing is they brought in a spiritualist, and he was like, she's possessed. And they were like, okay, family, all hands
on
deck.
That's the word for family in the Maori.
Oh, nice.
Whānau.
Well, they brought all hands on deck, and for days on end, they performed an exorcism on her, and she died.
So I've never heard of that in that culture. That's cool.
That's not a spoiler, guys. It literally begins with she's dead, you know. And it's about the kind of hysteria that occurred in this tight bubble of this little home. Like, they literally had grandfathers and fathers and uncles and aunts and all these kids all experiencing and all participating in the exorcism. And it's kind of like Salem witch trial-esque in its hysteria, but it's a great, great documentary.
Is it made from reenactments and photos? And
No. It's pure reenactments. Oh, wow. Yeah. And there's a couple of people who are interviewed who are actually involved in the case, like the cops who discovered everything and whatnot. Cool. But Vertical and XYZ picked it up, and I think they're going to do a small release. But those were my highlights. So,
cool. Yeah. Wow. Some good stuff.
Very cool.
All right. The one thing we all unanimously.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe it. Four for four.
Oh, yeah.
And here's why I'm shocked, because I think it's because when the trailer for this TV show came out, it was paired up with, like, was it, what channel is that on? Fox?
Fox.
Fox at 10.
They're slate. So,
Jared
Rivet. So it's like the Lethal Weapon teaser, which is like, oh, come on.
Yeah,
and some other
terrible
show. And then Exorcist, and you're just like, I don't know about that.
I wouldn't have watched it if people hadn't said it was good. I wouldn't have even gone
there.
Yeah,
you know, I DVR'd it because I was like, oh, it's premiering this week. Right. And I watched it the next morning with my roommate, and we were both like really impressed.
Yeah, it was really good. Really mature and classy, and I wasn't expecting that when they were like, oh, Fox is doing a remake of Exorcist.
Well, you know, because here's the thing. They did the one thing that is all I ever ask for any of these remakes, is they didn't remake the original movie.
Right.
In fact, they referenced the original. So then you're like, oh, okay, so that happened.
And now
you're
we can
in the
move
universe,
on.
You're in that world.
But you're not in that story.
But it's not that story. Uh-huh. And that will give you a pass no matter what. Mm-hmm. You know, I just hate when they're like, no, this is the new Reagan or what. It's like, no.
You have
no.
a show called The Exorcist that ends with Tubular Bells and it still felt fresh. The whole thing felt fresh. And when Tubular Bells came out, I had chills. It's like, wait a minute. We're going into some different territory.
What they smartly did is they recognized that you can't remake the fucking Exorcist.
No. Yeah.
You know, it's like I mean, how do you go into that? You could do what From Dusk Till Dawn did, which is like,
we do it
and then we're just going to spin off in a wildly crazy direction. They just, you know, with The Exorcist, the characters are great.
Mm-hmm.
Like the priests are great. Yeah. You know, the actors are fantastic. It was funny because halfway through, PlayStation put it on, they offered it for free to PlayStation subscribers on like a week before.
Mm-hmm.
So I downloaded it and we're sitting here, Ciara and I are watching it. And we were like, this is really good. Like, we should probably, because we were like wondering, should we stick around, you know? And we're like, no. And by the, like you said, by the time the Tubular Bells started playing, it was like, okay, you've earned that.
Right.
Yeah. I think you've definitely earned that.
Well, there's a twist, like, I think three quarters of the way through, which I think is what set it apart for me because
absolutely.
It plays with your expectations
in
such
fall
an
for
easy
that at
way.
All. Yeah, I was like, oh my God, that's where we're
you
going.
You know what? It reminds me more of, and I wonder if this was any influence at all, of that book, Head Full of Ghosts.
Mm.
It actually has a bit of the structure of that. And I started thinking, oh, interesting, because it felt modern, but the same take on that story. But either way, I was totally in. Mm-hmm. I was like ready for the second episode.
Yeah.
So
well, here's something to keep it up. And I think I looked on IMDb, it looks like there's only at least a listing for only 5 episodes. So I don't know how short a season this is or what.
I don't know.
It's like miniseries.
And before the show started, I said to Rob, I'm like, but it's also directed by the guy who did the last Planet of the Apes movie.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
So it's like you're getting a real director
and Jeremy Slater writing and he's acting as showrunner, you know. I mean, like,
and both priests were really good. They're both really interesting.
Yeah.
And Gina Davis back to horror.
Yeah.
Boom.
And Gina Davis, I was not expecting to like her in this. Like when I heard that she was going to be starring in it, I was like, I don't know how I feel about that. And she was great.
Yeah. But these a lot of them are as good as the
Alan Ruck, y'all.
Alan Ruck.
Yeah. Alan Ruck,
I forget
Mike Williamson's Alan Ruck.
Alan Ruck.
So that was unanimous.
Yeah.
That never happened.
Very surprising. Let's hope they keep the quality up.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, yeah, you know, I mean, like, we've all seen so many shows that are like start really strong and you're like, that's great. And then all of a sudden, season two, it takes a nosedive.
Because then, because I taped it off TV, we got the tease of the next episode. Mm-hmm. And it was hilarious because, you know, I'm not going to say what it is, but they kind of like were leaning towards what's coming up. And I was like, ooh, that's cool. And simultaneously, my roommate Dave's like, oh, no. So I was like, oh, that's so funny that we immediately split based on the preview for the second episode. Yeah. So I was like, oh, okay.
Now, but, have you guys been watching American Horror Story, too?
Yep.
What are you thinking? I'm loving it.
Me too.
Yeah, I'm
me
really
too.
Episode
two is usually episode two is where things start to take a turn.
It was intense.
Like the last couple of seasons. But it's cool. It's cool. It's a cool setup, you know? I mean, like you're watching basically a documentary. And, you know, you have to wonder about the stakes of it all because you have your characters actually talking to a king, you know, to an interviewer. So you're like, okay, well, obviously they survived.
They lived.
But, you know, what kind of other fates are, you know, in mind for the other characters. But so far, so good.
You never know with that show. Like, you could get to episode 10, you realize
they're all ghosts.
They'd only made half the documentary.
They're all aliens. I mean,
with those guys, that's actually one of their problems, is that sometimes they take the narrative too far, like in a crazy direction, but they don't earn it. And that's when I'm out of that show, like usually around episode 10 or something. Mm-hmm. But I'm on one episode and I liked it.
It's good.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it so far.
What else did you see, Becca?
So I have been continuing on my sci-fi horror kick that I was on last week. So this one, I talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Finally went back and watched it because it's on Shudder right now. Fermat's Room, 2007. Oh, yeah. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
I really like it.
That was part of the Six Films to Die For, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
Or the six films that keep you awake that Lionsgate put out?
The only one I've seen off that one, there was a Christmas one and The Baby's Room are the two that I watched off that. But it may have been on there. Mm-hmm. But it is about... there's this one math equation that all of these mathematicians are trying to solve. And they've been working on it for like 30 years. It's like super old equation. And it's like the greatest thing that you can do in the math world is to solve this equation. And so there's this kind of backstory of all these people have been trying to solve it. But then just for fun, a couple of them are invited to this weekend by this weird mathematician who calls himself Fermat and says, come, I'm going to fill you with a whole bunch of crazy equations all weekend. It's going to be fun. There'll be prizes. Come and solve them. It'll be great. And so all of these people show up because they're invited to this like mystery math weekend. This sounds really heady, and it is, but it's good. And then they show up, and he gets them all into one room and starts giving them enigmas. They're not really equations as much as like enigmas of like various puzzles to solve. And all of a sudden, the walls start closing in, and they realize that as long as they take to solve these questions, these enigmas, the walls start closing in, and then they calculate like how long it will take before they're all crushed. And then they have to figure out why they're in there and how they're all interconnected. Really good movie. I had such a good time with it. And yeah, it sounds like totally math geeky, and it is kind of math geeky, but I know nothing about math and I was still like totally into it. So that's not a requirement by any means. And then I watched Time Lapse, which is streaming on Netflix right now. It is from 2014, starring Danielle Panabaker. Has anybody else seen
this one?
Time Lapse.
No.
It is about a group of kids who discover that their neighbor in like the apartment across the way has built a camera that will take pictures exactly one day in advance. So if I was to take a picture of Elric, like what would appear would be Elric one day in advance. And so, of course, they do the most logical things.
Why would you do that, Becca?
He's just drinking Diet Coke.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not doing anything.
He's still just drinking Diet Coke. So they, of course, use it to start gambling, like posting up like who's winning races and things like that, so they can start gambling with it. But then things get sinister. Like they start getting these pictures back of them making out with other people, and things get kind of twisted and then backstabby.
Becca, I'm looking this up because I have never heard. I love Danielle Panabaker. What would prompt you to watch this movie? Where did you find this?
I've been doing a whole bunch of sci-fi stuff lately. Like anything
sci-fi. She moonlights
sci-fi
on a sci-fi site.
Like I could just see Becca like sitting at home on Saturday night going, you know what? I could use some time lapse right now.
No, this one, I'd been doing...
On those nights, let me know, and I'll send you a pizza.
Thanks. From a sci-fi time lapse night. No, last week I did a whole bunch of sci-fi horror ones, too. I rewatched Pandorum, which I highly recommend checking out now.
Oh.
I swear, watch it a second time. You'll like it better.
What's your next math title?
So, yeah, time lapse. Time lapse, I do have to say, it got kind of annoying, so it was not my favorite film I've ever watched. But okay. The lead-in was pretty cool.
Right.
And then the last one that I watched this week is not a math title, guys. I watched They're Watching because a lot of people – it's also streaming on Netflix right now. And a lot of people had recommended
this one
to me. They're Watching. It is on Netflix Instant right now. And the setup for it is the that this kind of house hunting show called House Hunters Global or something like that documents when people move from one country to another. So there's this reality crew and they follow this woman as she moves to this tiny town in Moldova. Which I had to look it up. It's like Eastern European.
So hold on, just to stop you there. There's a reality crew in a horror film. Okay.
Continue. Yeah. And so the whole thing, the whole opening of it is set up like the actual TV show. Like you're watching a TV show where they go in and document this woman. She's an artist moving to Moldova because she wants to just be in this old world country and experience art. And then it goes found footage. And it's about the crew going back to document her 6 months later. And that's where it gets really annoying. Because then it does what I'm going to call Blair Witch Syndrome now, where it probably spends 15 minutes while the crew explains all their cameras to each other. Like, I'm going to put this one on your head, and you can wear it on your head. And I'm like, first off, they're a key TV crew. They should know how to work the cameras. And then it's that same thing of, like, we've never seen a found footage film before. And then it's... goes into about a half an hour of the crew dicking around as they like go to bars and make fun of the locals. But then at the 42-minute mark, it actually gets interesting. And there's this whole kind of like people in the town are very suspicious of witchcraft. And there was a witch burning in the town recently. And then it gets slightly interesting and things get kind of gory and good. But
your review comes with instructions.
Oh, my God.
All right,
no.
It's pretty good. But then at the 23-minute mark, it's not so good.
No, but that's what I'm saying.
It gets good.
The first 42 minutes.
Yeah.
The first 42 minutes, I was begging Dave to let me keep watching because I was like, it has to get good at some point. People have recommended this to me. It has to be good at some point. And the whole time, he's like, can't we just fucking watch Star Trek? And I made him keep going. And around 42 minutes, I will say, it got interesting.
It's like that Suspiria poster. If the first 42 minutes don't grab you, the 43rd minute will. Becca McKendry. Please.
Yeah. I don't think I would recommend it to people, but...
Well, that was a lot of talking for not recommending this to
them. Yeah.
Come on.
So
we've got movies we want to talk about.
That was like a slow motion smackdown.
Slow motion smackdown. That was my slow-mo smackdown. It was not my favorite film I've seen this year.
All right.
Oh, my God.
Uh-oh.
I just like completely zoned out on Becca there. I'm kidding.
Elric, what the hell did you say?
I'll do some of these quick.
Yeah.
Because some of them I just saw again. Look, man, I haven't seen Candyman in a while. It's always been a great movie.
Best horror movie of the 90s.
It is
best
horror films of all time and definitely of the 90s.
Yep.
Just such a romantic film. I love the way it's put together. Everything about it. I missed maybe the first 10 minutes, discovered it was on TV, and then watched the rest of it. I was like, man, that's a good movie. So can't wait to get a nice Blu-ray. That one day.
I hope.
Check it out. A couple of funny ones. We saw a cover at Cinephile a couple weeks ago of movies we hadn't seen. The Enigma by Lucio Fulci cover is so awesome.
Oh, my God,
and I was so excited.
That's the one with the
weird Enigma
hands.
Enigma. And I was like, how is there a proper release of a Fulci film I haven't seen? I was like, all excited. A group of us got together and watched it. And oh, boy, there's a reason we haven't seen this. The best scene in it, there's a murder by snails. The person's covered by 100 snails just slowly crawl, and that's the only highlight of the movie. There's one very sexy, crazy dream scene. It is so just. It's just typical when Fulci doesn't quite hit. It's got all those hallmarks. It's clunky. Yeah. It's slow. You don't really know what the fuck's going on. But hey, on that, it's still better than a lot of other movies out there.
Please watch Murder Rock.
I think it's before Cat in the Brain. It's probably like a couple years before Cat in the Brain. Bloody Birthday, I'd never seen.
Ooh.
Same day. So we chased Enigma with, and Bloody Birthday was much more entertaining. Really fun movie. Scary kids. I don't have. When I got to Sinister too. I was a little put off because I'm not a big scary kids as the source of menace guy, like especially if it's the twist. But in this movie, in Sinister 2, it's not really a twist, but in this one, they're, you know, they're the crazy maniacs from the opening shot of the movie. There's an eclipse and they're all born without empathy because they're born during an eclipse, which I love that conceit. And they go around and they just kind of kill all the people in this town. And it's really fun. It's really well directed. That's the thing. You expect it to be kind of like a cheap exploitation film, and it doesn't look cheap and it doesn't feel cheap. It actually looks like they had quite a budget. Great performances. I highly recommend that for fun. And then a movie that I was in a million years would not have expected to come here and tell you it is now my pantheon of best films. I had not watched Martyrs since it came out.
Oh, wow.
And on this Sunday, I'm doing the projection booth with, and unfortunately, I'm outmatched because the girl I'm going to be on with just wrote a book on Martyrs and French extreme cinema. So I'm going to be the dummy in the room. But so I had to rewatch it. And they said, and I have to rewatch the remake, which I haven't done yet. And I'm sure I'll hate it.
I'm sorry.
So I watched it last night, and all I remembered was the ending. And I always felt like, oh, the ending's really important. Like, it felt important to me. But the rest of the movie was like, it wasn't as – I was scared to pick it up, put it in. It was what, like the last movie I recall actually being a little scared to put in a player. Like, a little bit nervous because I'd heard things, and you put it in. That's the last time I felt that. I didn't feel that with what's the Serbian film? By then, I was over that. Put it in last night, and the whole first 50 minutes – felt completely fresh and new to me. It is so unrelenting and so brilliantly made. Mm-hmm. And then the idea, the second half comes in, which is like a different movie in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But the ideas in it are so strong, and it's such the opposite. I think at the time, if you watched this movie when it came out, you're still movies like Hostel and Saw were still existed. And this movie was made as an opposition to them. It was so in a way it kind of got lumped in with them, but it's a direct opposite. It's a direct comment on those movies, which is instead of making films where you're watching torture and pain for your pleasure, I'm going to show you something that is the most horrible thing you could ever imagine. And it's to do the opposite of that. It's to show you how far the human spirit can go and how awful a person can do to get an answer. This movie knocked my fucking socks off. After it ended, I was like, I haven't felt that way watching a horror film in years. Like that absolute hollowed out, you know, there's no fucking redemption in this movie. And then you're like, how did this – I really don't understand how he hasn't gone on to – I mean, Tall Man's terrible. I hated that film.
Yeah.
But I don't understand how he hasn't made a follow-up film because this thing was really powerful, mm-hmm. I thought.
Yeah.
I have to revisit it because I had a pretty strong negative reaction to it.
At the time?
Because I really –
it's an unpleasant movie.
Yeah, I mean, it is. But I mean, I remember – actually, it was really funny. I remember when I worked at Amoeba, I was helping David Slade once, and I recognized him right away, and he asked for it, and we like immediately got in a disagreement where I was like, I really love the first half of this movie when it's like a revenge movie, but I hate the second half. And he's like, well, I really like the second half and I hate the first.
Oh,
and me, I was like, oh man,
I honestly do think it's context of the time. I really think it's a different movie when you aren't watching when Saw movies and that aren't part of our current horror climate.
Yeah, yeah.
It really just was clearer movie to me, but the first half was so good. So like it's just these two girls are just electric, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And even by this point, even with French cinema, we'd seen kind of the extreme. Like it wasn't shocking when it came out just because we'd seen Inside and Frontiers.
Oh, but this one, Martyrs.
I mean, Martyrs pushes it. But
this is the one that people shocked. I love Inside. I love the way it's filmed. But you're never, it's a fantasy. There's something about this film that feels real. I don't know what it is. Even though as a monster and stuff, there's all this crazy. I don't know what it is about that film.
I'm looking forward to hearing what you think of the remake because
I'm sure I'll hate it.
But now I'm curious what the differences are.
The only thing I've heard is that it actually goes to a positive, like almost a survivalist kind of idea.
Okay.
So it actually does change the story, which is good. I'm glad it changes it because I don't think, you know, it's so specifically French that I don't know what you would do. Has anyone seen it?
Yeah.
Oh, you've seen it?
Yeah.
You love it?
No.
The remake? But what if you work with that person one night? You just injured your relationship. I'm just shouldn't do podcast, Turk.
And honestly, but I'll say that it's still a pretty downbeat ending.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
It's like the torture. The systematic torture is a little bit removed.
Okay.
It's not as extreme, but the idea of what's going on behind a methodology is still there. It's still in place. It's just it doesn't translate very well, I don't think.
I will say this about the French one. I have no idea why that film's not on Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. I mean, in general. That's just a film people want, right?
Just an import, I think.
Yeah.
But not here in America.
There's a great making of on the disc, and he's very candid. I mean, probably why he wouldn't have worked. I mean, the way he talks about filmmaking is you get the feeling he might even be a little unstable. It's a pretty amazing making of. It's very in-depth and passionate and all that good stuff. Before we get to yours, I did want to say we didn't say anything. Thank you guys for the sport on the t-shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my
I feel
God.
Like we
yeah.
forgot at the top of the show. We sold a whole bunch of them went.
We did. And you know, Aaron from Cavity Colors said a lot of people that already shopped there, but a lot of new people. So yeah. if anything, at least we turned some people onto his shop.
And I think he's making a few extra. There won't be a lot. So if you haven't ordered, you should do it soon.
Yeah.
Because
This is pretty much kind of obviously, like, I mean, like, look, people are like, I want Pure Cinema on the back and this and that. It's like, all right, look, we'll get there.
Let's, like, want Pure Cinema on the back.
Or the deep end of hard. But, but, you know, look, it's I don't understand. None of us know how to make shirts here. It's a little bit of a complicated
process. It's a process.
It's like we have a logo. It's got two colors. That's possible.
Yeah.
So this was kind of a test run. It did fairly well. You know, and Aaron's going to order a few extras just in case you didn't get it on the first weekend.
Yeah.
But, yeah, definitely support him in the shop and you know, send us the photos when you get
it. Yeah, that would be fun.
Mm-hmm. That's I want to see you.
I was very excited. When I was at Fantastic Fest, I had a large number of people come up and say, I listen to Shockwaves.
Oh, cool.
So hello to all of you. But what the special thrill I got was going, did you know we had a t-shirt? And they went, what? And I was like, look, it's on our Instagram. Take a look. And they were like, oh, my God, I'm going to order one of those tonight. So hopefully.
Huge in Austin, Texas, apparently.
If only you'd been wearing it then, you know? Missed opportunities. All right.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go really quick because I saw a bunch of stuff. But most of it's, you know, stuff that we've talked about in some form or fashion.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, I went to Monsterpalooza. And normally I don't advocate this sort of thing, but there are certain movies that have slipped through the cracks that have been impossible to find. So in essence, I find a DVD, which is usually ripped off of a VHS or a Laserdisc or whatever. So I picked up three films, the first being Fright Night 2 in widescreen.
Elric is going to love you for this.
Because Elric keeps saying how much it's a classic movie and totally different in widescreen. I don't agree with you still.
Love it.
But I will tell you that I definitely did appreciate it more as a movie in widescreen. It must have come off a Laserdisc. The version I got actually looked pretty decent, and it had chapter, you know, breaks and stuff like that. The thing I love about it is Julie Carmen is amazing as Regine.
You didn't like the comedy gags? There's so many good gags in that film.
There's a few comedy gags that are really good. I think, you know what it is, and this happens every time I see it, because it's a well-made movie, and I like Tommy Lee Wallace. I like the you know, there's like one gag where the guy, John Grimes, is that his name?
Yeah, he's amazing.
Where he's like walking, the dog's barking at him, and he just turns. And for that one shot, he's like the wolf thing.
In
and
general, he's one of the best things about it. He's funny.
He's great in it. Yeah. And then, you know, there's a lot of good humor, there's a lot of good stuff too, a lot of good ideas. I think every time I watch it, it follows the beats of the original too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just the exact same movie. Almost the exact same movie.
I don't know.
Something
I
a little
feel
bit different.
No,
it's a great opening. I think it's one of my favorite sequel openings, you know, because it's Charlie recapping everything.
Yeah.
And then he just goes, and that's how it happened.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a great start.
I will say it's a crowd film, man. I was watching that with that new Biv crowd last. I mean, people were going apeshit. And it was nice to see that because I'd always had fond memories, but I didn't know if it still played well.
Right.
So that was fun. Mm.
So there was that. I also got Fade to Black from 1980, which is one of those kind of long ones that everyone always talks about. Now I know why they'll never be able to put it out, because there's so much footage from other movies in it. Uh-huh. The lead of it is played by Dennis Christopher and
Eric Binford, I think is the character name.
Yeah, and he is like a huge movie fan. Like that, he's just, you know, he kind of becomes obsessed with this girl at the diner that is a Marilyn Monroe impersonator, and he's always making movie references. And when he does, it usually cuts to that movie. So there'll be a clip of Creature from the Black Lagoon when he mentions it. Mm. So as I was watching, I was like, oh, yeah, they're never going to clear.
It'd be a perfect Halloween film if it was ever out. I need to watch it at Halloween.
I almost put it on my list.
It's fun in that sense that it's kind of, you know, and then he kind of, obviously things don't, he kind of snaps, and that's where the horror element comes in. But it's an interesting movie. I don't think it's a great one, but it's a fun one and kind of, in that period pre-slasher, because it's not really a slasher, but I'm sure it would get lumped in there.
Tonally,
it's,
maybe like popcorn a little. Like popcorn's a better
definitely,
movie for sure.
Definitely. It's definitely popcorn-esque. And, you know, it's fun seeing Mickey Rourke is in it as like one of the bullies. It's one of his early roles.
I always remember it as being like embracing the horror fan. Like it sang like our champion song, because it was always like everyone in his life was like, I can't believe you like all those gross movies. And he was always like, no, there's more to them. So I always remember.
But he does snap and start killing people, so it's not really
the secondary
really good thing for us. And the third title was Rawhead Rex.
Never seen it. I want to see it.
Oof. I really kind of like that.
I like it in a fun way,
not like an actually scary way. I mean, it's a big giant rubber non-moving monster, and he's got that receding hairline thing going on.
What's the downside? I want to see this one. I've never seen it.
I will lend it to you because it was the the downside?
Everyone's saying no.
The whole movie is the downside.
Is it a good copy at least?
It's pretty decent. Okay. Yeah, I think it came from a VHS of it, but
Everyone's saying no. Everyone in this room is shaking their heads at me.
I have a European
import
that's
pretty
clean.
Like, no.
Okay.
Yeah, it's rough, but it's amusing.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, if I was 12 as a creature feature, like at 12 years old, I might have dug it. But yeah, the creature's just awful.
And I think that's why I've got kind of a soft place in my heart for it, is I saw it when I was 12. Like that's when, and I was kind of like, oh,
he pisses on a priest.
He does.
But it's not.
Mic drop.
It's kind of, it's in the background.
You know.
That ticks off one of my viewing requirements. Pissed on the priest.
I mean, it's definitely like a monster on the loose movie where through much of it, it's like he appears with a bolt of lightning and then he like breaks dishes and knocks down walls for a while. He breaks into one farmhouse and is like busted up the china.
It's basically it's basically a monstrous WWE wrestler running around with a horse face eating people.
The face has no articulation.
Instead of being a giant penis, like he is in the Clive Barker novella.
That might be a little weird, but you know.
Yeah.
That's definitely
you
right
can find
for
that
remake,
in comics.
Though. And last but not least, I did a double bill last night. Obviously, the Halloween season is upon us, and I like to break out the classics. So I watched the Spanish version of Dracula, 1931.
Cool.
I'd never actually seen it. Mm-hmm. I always go right to the Bela Lugosi one, and I really liked it. I you know, a lot of people say it's superior because they shot on the same sets, but right after the American one. I don't know. I enjoyed it a lot. I don't know which one is better. I mean, I find the original Dracula, I respect it, but it's a little on the boring side.
The other one's more iconic, but the Spanish one, I think, is just better made. It's almost
the Spanish one's better made, but also it's like 20 extra minutes longer, so it feels like an eternity.
Yeah.
But I do like Carlos Villar, the guy that plays Dracula in it, and I thought it was... You know what? If you watch Dracula every Halloween, I think it's nice to switch it out every once in a while and watch the Spanish version because it felt like a really cool, like long-lost foreign film from that era. So I really liked it. And then I went right to the Hammer box set because, again, my Hammer knowledge is kind of spotty, and I watched The Evil of Frankenstein.
Mm.
Which is one of the later ones, I guess.
Peter Cushing.
Well, I don't know who plays the
monster.
At one
point, Peter Boyle, and one of them plays Frankenstein. I can't remember which one that is.
Not young Frankenstein?
No.
Yeah.
No, it's Peter Cushing, and I don't know who played the creature.
I'll look up Curse.
But no, I thought it was actually a really well-made movie. It's actually from, who is the director here? Freddie Francis, who did Tales from the Crypt.
He's done a bunch of the Hammer stuff.
Doctor and the Devils. But it was a lot of fun. I mean, you know, it's the Hammer stuff is basically remakes of all those other ones, so it's pretty much the same story. I posted the title, and somebody was kind of making fun of the monster, like, oh, the blockhead thing. And I'm like, yeah, but the original has a blockhead. And in high def, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty goofy, but I still like it, you know, so.
Those movies were always, you know, whether it was the Frankenstein or the Mummy or anything like that, it's always like, the Frankenstein movies were special because it was like, uh-oh, you know, Frankenstein's on death row. Frankenstein is hiding out in a house. Frankenstein has shacked up with some kid and he's going to be his tutor. And then, you know, you always knew that somewhere along the way they were going to make a monster, you know?
Yeah. But no, I really dug it a lot. And I mean, more than anything, it's like, I'll watch anything with Peter Cushing. He's like one of those actors. Like every time I discover one of the older Hammer movies, I'm just like, man, this guy's amazing. And I kind of miss that we don't have horror icons of that sort anymore. But anyway, so that's what I saw.
Peter Boyle did play Frankenstein in a little movie called Frankenstein, but you know, I can't find the Hammer one that was in my brain. Frankenstein.
We'll see. Maybe somebody at home knows. But stick around. We're going to bring our guests on and tackle haunts.
Wait, our guests over there?
It's no secret. We at Shockwaves are huge fans of horror on film, on TV, and especially in person. Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios Hollywood brings together the sickest minds in horror to immerse guests in a living, breathing, three-dimensional world of terror. Now through November 5th, 2016, Halloween Horror Nights features a new slate of unrivaled film and television production quality mazes, frightful scare zones, and a fully reimagined terror tram experience, all uniquely themed to today's most definitive horror properties, like The Exorcist, American Horror Story, Halloween, Hell Comes to Haddonfield, Freddy vs. Jason, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Krampus, The Walking Dead, and The Purge Election Year. These mazes are scary as hell, and we will be telling you about each of them in graphic detail over the next few weeks. As Southern California's most extreme Halloween event, Halloween Horror Nights is designed to taunt, terrorize, and torment guests as they navigate the darkness from one frightening maze to another. Tickets are available for purchase at www.HalloweenHorrorNights.com/Hollywood, including a front-of-line ticket option that enables guests to enjoy priority access to each of the Halloween Horror Nights mazes and the Terror Tram, a theme park ride. Advance purchase is recommended as events nights will sell out. Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios Hollywood. Nobody does Halloween better. Visit HalloweenHorrorNights.com/Hollywood now for more info and to get your tickets.
Okay, so we're back with our very, very special guests, only because they're the only two people I know that were crazy enough to sign up for this tension experience thing that I've been hearing a lot about. You know, we want to dabble and talk about, you know, this is the Halloween season, so we like to do haunts and mazes and hayrides, and now there's escape rooms, and they've just gotten more elaborate and more interactive over the years. But this sounds like the craziest thing that I've ever heard, and unfortunately, I kind of knew the perpetrator from the get-go, and I told him, I was like, well, I'm definitely never doing this, so. But anyway, welcome to the show, Mr. Andrew Cash.
Hello.
And Buzz Hello. Wallach.
Hi.
Hi. And just so you guys know, you know, Andrew's been on our show previously before in Killer POV. He is one of the co-directors of Never Sleep Again, arguably one of the best making of documentaries for a franchise ever. And he's also a spectacular editor. He works on a lot of the Scream Factory releases and currently editing Legends of Tomorrow, the DC show, and before that, The Flash.
And he was a director on Tales of Halloween as
Tales of Halloween as well. Mm-hmm. There you go.
And lots of really excellent shorts, like this one called Thirsty.
And where can you find that, Buzz?
It's actually on the Blu-ray for Tales of Halloween, which I didn't have anything to do with, except I was in it because Andrew wanted me to come out all night and scream my head off.
Right, right. And then with Buzz, you know, Buzz is currently, you know, Buzz is a jack of all trades, but he's been producing a lot of films lately. But I've worked with him for years kind of as behind the scenes crew on a lot of these Shout Factory and Scream Factory releases, shooting a lot of the interviews and stuff that ends up becoming the documentaries. He's worked on all the docs. He shot something for me with Psycho Legacy. He shot all of Never Sleep Again and Crystal Lake Memories. And
if there's a horror franchise out there, I probably put a finger or two in it.
Hey now. but yeah, so, and the other thing is both of you guys are, when it comes to this sort of thing, the horror haunts, or I don't even know if that's the appropriate term for it, but
this is like an experience, horror experience.
It's either ARG or immersive gaming or, you know, immersive gaming
theater,
experience, escape rooms. Yeah.
The horror,
like I feel like the haunts are reserved for things like Not Scary Farm, Universal Halloween Horror Nights, the stuff that you could find in a neighborhood, you know, where someone puts on like their own little maze or something like
that.
Yeah,
and it's they're like, traditionally called like mazes, walkthroughs, or dark rides.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. When did you guys first get wind of because I think, Andrew, you told me about Delusion. Is that the one?
Delusion. Yeah.
Well, when did you get wind of like these elaborate ones that required not just walking through a maze and getting like people pumping, you know, jumping out of you, whatever?
It was probably about 5 years ago. I was working on Beavis and Butthead at the time for Mike Judge. And one of the guys on the show was an actor in Delusion. And this was some sort of upstart thing. They were advertising it as like a haunted play at the time. Mm-hmm. And this was before I had heard of like this whole immersive theater thing, which is now really starting to catch on. So I thought it was just like a traditional haunt. So I went opening night and was shocked because, you know, haunts are generally passive things. You know, they're mazes set up. You walk through and actors pop out and they go boo. And, you know, they're very safe. They have a lot of precautions because they're usually dealing with the masses. So things never get too freaky. And Delusion sort of like broke through all these boundaries. It was set in this house, I think, out near UCLA. And a lot of movies have been shot there too. After I visited that little mansion, I know Mike Mendez shot there for a couple movies. It's just something that you see pop up a lot. It was sort of structured like a play, and you're interacting with the actors, and they're touching you. They're reaching out. They're grabbing you. You are running at full force from room to room, sometimes like barricading things up yourself, looking for objects to help defend yourself. And this was put on by a guy named John Braver, who is a Hollywood stuntman. And the most amazing thing about it was half the actors were stunt people. Mm-hmm. So you would have people running across ceilings, like scurrying across ceilings, like they're from an Exorcist movie.
There's wire work.
Lots of wire works. He would introduce like an element where you would learn sort of like a spell chant, you know, like a sort of like a Harry Potter thing. So if you would be rounding a corner and a mental patient would be running at you, you could scream like "Expecto Patronum" or whatever the hell the thing was, and point your finger at them, and that actor would go sailing back like 15 feet down the hallway. It was just unbelievably elaborate, and it felt the closest thing to me like actually living through a horror movie.
Yeah, you're an active participant.
Mm-hmm. How long did that one last? Because usually the average maze is what, like 5 minutes? You run through a thing, people pop out.
Two-hour line.
No. I would disagree with that because that's like the universal ones last 5 minutes. Yeah. But most of like the professional haunts that you go to, things like the 13th Floor or Erebus or Netherworld, things like the ones that like people travel across state lines to go to, it's like a 45-minute experience.
Yeah. It's still like that right there, though, is still pales in comparison to some of the things that are coming up now, which are literally like month-long haunts where essentially you're being followed and snuck up on and you know, doing those kind of things.
It's the level of participation. Haunts, you know, the mazes, you're observing. Delusion, you might get a unique experience in itself, you know. I mean, I remember when I went through, which was the same one you went through, which is like the haunted house. We were going down a hallway, and basically the guide was like, "Okay, dude, you need to go down to the end of the hallway to that bathroom." And I looked in the bathroom, and there's like an old woman just laying in the tub. And he's like, "You need to grab the key out of there." And I was like, "Okay." And then everybody's like pushing me. So I'm walking down the hallway. You go into the bathroom, and like a horror film, they were seeing something I did not, because behind me there was a creepy little lady that was hiding behind the door, closing the bathroom door, shutting me off from everybody else.
Oh, that's
so
fun.
What happened was I was trapped in this room with this creepy little lady and an old woman in a bathtub. And then while I'm standing there going, okay, I can hear everybody screaming in the hallway, because what was happening to them was the ceiling had come down and something jumped out on a wire and scared everybody off. Mm. So I had my own little adventure in which this like girl came in from another room, said, "You're my best friend," took me into her room, put me in her bed, tucked me in at the night, and then read me a bedtime story. And then what happened was while she's telling me a bedtime story, I hear, "Get the fuck out." And I look up in the ceiling, and in the ceiling is someone dressed in black peeking through the slots telling me to get away. Oh, you know, you're allowed to do that stuff, you know. And then that's evolved into what Buzz is alluding to, which is kind of like the new form of, you know, ingratiating itself into your life, you know.
And did that start? Was it Blackout where they would put a hood over you and they'd yell at you? And
Blackout's more of like psychological. Blackout's a psychological aggressive experience. Yeah. You know, that's shoving
there's
you.
There's a couple of them that. Now I should preface.
Me off,
I should preface
now.
This entire conversation with, I'm like you in that, you know, Andrew would call me and be like, "Oh, I just did this thing. You gotta do it." And I'm like, "They touch you? No." Because I'm Russian, so I have fight or fight more. Like, there's no fight or flight. Like, if someone touches me, I'm going to hit you.
Don't
hit me.
Touched.
So, I don't want to be touched. And those kind of experiences, it's kind of difficult for me to be like, all right, I might pull a knife or a gun or something. You know what I mean? Like, don't fuck with me. So when Andrew would call me about these kind of things, I would always be like, that sounds fucking terrible. Why are you doing this? But he'd call me and describe all these things in great detail, especially when he started getting into things. Did you ever do Blackout? I don't know if you did that one.
I've never done Blackout. I don't know if I could. I hear it's not as extreme as its reputation
is. There's one that's even worse than Blackout.
Heretic.
No. There's one in San Diego.
That's not even a haunt.
That's the one that people pay like $10,000 to do, and it's got like a six-month
wait. If you read about it, it's literally
It's free two cans of dog food. Yeah. Two cans? Oh, there's one that I've heard that's super expensive.
From what I've read about it, it's essentially like a guy that if he didn't have this would be a serial killer. that he you know, just does everything he possibly can in his apartment to just fuck you up.
That's not a haunt. That's not that's theater.
It's started to morph into a couple of different.
There's different rails. The entertainment experience is riding three different rails. You've got the traditional home haunt. You've got or not three different rails, but multiple rails. Which home haunt, the bigger kind of like mazes, you know, the kind of big ticket number kind of things, you know, Halloween Horror Nights, Knots. And then you've got kind of the, I don't know, boundary pushing, personal bubble popping experiences like Blackout. And then you've got,
the physically aggressive ones.
Yeah. So did you do Blackout?
No.
Let me tell you about Blackout really quick.
You did that one.
I've done Blackout multiple,
I remember
multiple
following
times.
Your tweets and going, I'm not going to do that.
The first time
I did Blackout was with a friend, Bobby Luther. We took, and Darren Bousman, and his wife, Laura. And we went in and it was downtown, and basically we did that one. I did one in New York, and then I went back to L.A., and then I did the Sundance experience earlier this year because they did one, you know, like kind of a little pop-up Blackout experience. And that one
for
was
kids.
And that one was even more aggressive because you're already at like 0 degree weather, and then they make you take everything off. Like you get wet. And I was like, please don't get me wet. Like, please don't get me wet. And they were like, no. Well, you're signing your waiver. I was like, oh, fuck. And then they shove you out into the middle of, you know, the street in the middle of Sundance where everybody's drunk and you're covered and you're wet and you're holding your clothes and you're not wearing your boots and you're just wearing like a shirt, you know. But it's like it felt tame once I did it once, you know. And basically what it is they throw a hood over you. They put noise-canceling headphones on you. They blindfold you, whatever. They basically rob you of your senses. So you're just – all you hear is static. And then when you go in, you know, they take the blindfold off. They shove you around a lot. There's a lot of shoving, telling you you're puny, telling you you're a piece of shit. And then you could wind up in a room where there's two basically suicide girls waiting for you, and the floor is covered with condoms. And when a girl says, Ryan, take off your boots – I'm like, yes, ma'am. I will take off my boots.
Shit, I should have done Blackout.
And then they're like, take off your shirt or take off whatever. And you're like, yes. And then they're like, crawl around in the condoms. And you're like, oh, okay.
I take it back. I should have done Blackout.
And there was like one experience where a guy walks up to you and he's like, staple my hand. And you're like, with what? And he gives you like an industrial stapler. And then you're like, okay, staple. And of course, there's obviously nothing in it, but he acts like he does. But the one in New York City was the one that fucked me up a little bit because I got down on my knees and I was crawling through a tunnel that had an inch of water in it. And when I came out, there was this greased up dude that was like, it's okay. I'm going to take you to the next level. And I'm like, okay, cool. And he's like, come on. First, you got to lick me. And I was like, excuse me.
What?
And he goes, you got to lick my nipple. And I was like, I don't know. And he's like, are you going to say the safe word? I'm like, I'm not going to say the safe word. And he's like, well, come caress. And he like brings me into a hug. And I just kind of was like, and what I'm doing is just poking my tongue out for a second. He's like, oh, that felt so good. And then he like move on. And you're like, okay, that's crazy. Moving on. And you move on. And then there was a moment in which I met, there was kind of like a unified theme with Blackout where they want you to experience a girl ODing. And so after I've, you know, kissed this man's chest and moved on to the next level.
What a polite way to say you licked a man's nipple. Yeah.
there was a girl who was like, come on, come with me. And she acted like she was shooting up. And I was like, I don't know if you should do that. And she's like, which way do you want to go, left or right? And you're like, left. So she takes you down one hallway. And then she's like, left or right? And she takes you down another hallway. And we were there sitting in front of a fireplace. And all of a sudden she starts having seizures. And she's like, quick, get into the fireplace. I'm like, okay. And she shoves me into the fireplace. And she comes down and crawls in with me. And all of a sudden I just hear. And I was like, oh my gosh, she just hit her head. And she did. She's like, she was like, ooh. Oh. And I was like, oh my God, are you okay? Break character. It's okay. It's okay. And she's like, I'm okay. Oh, fuck, that really hurt. And then she was like, she started like OD'ing. And then from that point on, you know, then it gets even more aggressive because then the guys come in, they put a gun to your head, they throw you in a coffin with this dead OD girl. Oh, Elric is shaking his head.
Why? Look, man, none of this sounds funny to me.
I'm literally telling the story and everybody's just like, look, what the fuck?
There's a reason we are on this podcast. It's because we like movies and the rest of the shit is terrifying.
Because I'm about, you know what? I'm like Frank from Hellraiser. I want to push the limits a little bit and see what I can experience.
Look where that
You know what it got? It got my mom calling me the next morning going, honey, what's wrong with you? Because I told her all about it. And she was just like, what's wrong? I was like, Mom, you know who I am. Come on, what are you talking about?
So you sucked another man's nipple. Yeah.
barely touched it.
I mean, I literally have tuned out except for
the nipple. That's what I'm fixated on now.
I went to where I needed to go to move on to the next round. But, you know, Blackout's a very specific experience. And there's a documentary out there called The Blackout Experiment.
Which is terrific. Which actually, it stars one of the guys we did Tension with.
Right.
One of the main participants, Russell.
Russell.
Russell was a Jump Cut regular.
Yes, of course.
He's great. And he actually, he has a podcast, him and Mike Fontaine, called My Haunt Life, which is fantastic. And they just did an episode with the creators of Tension Experience, which I highly recommend anyone listening.
The hilarious thing is I went and saw the Blackout documentary in the theater here, and I took my partner John Skip with me, and he was bouncing up and down in his chair the entire time in pure rage, wanting to tear through the screen and choke the creators of Blackout to death.
Oh, great.
And he still cannot wrap his head around why anybody would do this to themselves, let alone why anyone would think this was a good idea to put on.
It's a weird inkling why?
I mean, do you got in yourself, not in everyone, but you, is it just because you want to push some extreme button and see what you're capable of? Or can you still see it as fantasy while you're doing
it? You can still see it as fantasy, okay. I think. Yeah. It's about like shattering your day-to-day comfort zone, you know? You come out of these experiences and every single one of them sticks with you, you know?
The documentary or the faux documentary or whatever, I don't believe a word of it, but, you know, the people who experience Blackout and come together and talk about it have some sort of transcendent experience, you know? And I was just kind of like, no, I came out of that and I was like, damn, I crawled around. My knees really hurt. Yeah. You know, it's just like there's nothing out of it. It's just like, oh, okay, I did that.
I went to the martyr's room and got skinned alive. Hey, I mean, it's transcendent.
I haven't seen the full movie, but I do know that at one point, someone in the documentary fist fucks a chicken.
What? Yes, they
what?
Do. They
what?
They fist yeah. fuck a chicken.
Yeah,
I don't remember that.
Yeah. Well, it's not alive. All right, it's a plucked store-bought chicken that they're fist fucking.
Does not change my original statement of someone in this documentary fist fucks a chicken.
And that you had your finger in a few. Yeah,
I just love Rob's face. Rob, you say that phrase. Yeah. It's kind of
Rob, who's hard to get out of the house.
What's interesting is that when Andrew saw the Blackout. Now this is during all the tension stuff, and so Andrew and I were very much on the phone. We'll get into all that, why him and I were talking back and forth, but you know, every day was like this is what happened, this is what's going on, here's all this stuff. And there, my office where I was working at the time on a film was right around the corner from the Lemley 7, and I didn't know that's where he saw it, but I'm on the phone with him talking about tension stuff, and this is an experience where everything is connected, nothing is a coincidence. And, you know, it's general weirdness 24 hours a day.
You're looking over your shoulder basically constantly while you're doing
this. And I'm outside smoking a cigarette talking to Andrew on the phone. And then I start hearing his voice louder and louder. And here he comes rounding the corner on the phone with me. And I'm looking at him. And we just had this moment of like, oh, fuck. Is this part of the game?
What happened?
And then you both got buried alive.
Yeah. Well, that could still happen.
Actually, bucket chicken in the coffin.
I will talk in a bit about, there's a haunted house that I just mentioned called Erebus that does bury you alive. But
No, I did it.
It was surprisingly, and I won't say bury you alive. What they do, and this is like a maze haunt where you walk through, and it's a really good one. It's one of the longest ones. It's built, it's right outside of Detroit in Pontiac, Michigan, and it's
even
super.
I'm going to go get buried in Michigan.
You guys would fucking love this one.
In December.
And they built it in an old taxi cab factory. Like, they used to build taxi cabs there. So it spans multiple levels. But that's kind of their, one of their big things is, like, you will be buried alive. And you don't really expect it. But at one point, and they change it every year, so it's probably different by now. But the year that I went, I was covering it for Fango. They put you into an elevator and you just think, like, oh, they're taking me up to the next level of the haunt. And all of a sudden you feel something start falling on your head. And then you feel it slowly, like, filling up the elevator, and the entire elevator is filling with something, and it's pitch black, so you don't know what it is.
Fuck that.
You can just tell that they're, like, whatever it is small. And then it gets to the point where, like, you, it's over your head and you can feel that whatever
small,
it
like
is.
Small like sand? Like it's being filled with sand?
I'll tell you what it is in a sec. You can't tell while it's happening. You can just tell. But whatever it is, it's big enough that you can still breathe. Like it's not filling in air gaps or anything like that. So you can still breathe.
It's packing popcorn.
Whatever it is, you feel it piling up over your head to the point that you can actually feel like the weight of it over your head.
Ugh.
And then the floor lets away just a little bit. Like you see these cracks of light. And then all of these tiny little – they're not like – I think that they were smaller than ping pong balls. But they're little plastic balls then just float away. And the entire thing just goes down super quick. Wow. But they leave you like that for a second.
That had been cockroaches.
It was but it's a crazy experience. It was by, it's not even the best part of that haunt. I'll talk about it later.
Are there any sexy ones? Like where you touch, naked bodies and sushi.
The adult con arrives at the LA Convention Center every year.
But I want a horror one that's sexy.
There is.
Actually,
there is?
Well, Tension has some interesting...
Some erotic moments.
Some erotic moments that are erotic for some people and not for others. And
exactly.
Erotic, you know, objectively and erotic subjectively.
Sleep No More in New York kind of has a similar feel to it. You know, it's a multi-layered... It's a giant warehouse in downtown New York that in which you kind of go in and you're basically watching four or five levels of various different narratives play out in an environment that they've created on each floor. And when you go in, there's kind of like a little nightclub lounge area where they have like a 1920s band playing, and you can get overpriced drinks and whatnot. But once you're ready for the experience, you put on a mask and everybody's anonymous. And there's a little bit of
Eyes Wide Shut.
It's super cool.
Well, I put a mask on, immediate erection.
Well, it was funny because I had gone with a date who took me, and it was funny because we went into an elevator. And the elevator guy was like, okay, third floor.
Lick my nipple.
And I stepped up. And I was immediately like,
remember me, Ryan? I'm back.
And I had to, and he's like, third floor. And I get off. And all of a sudden, I hear the door closing. And I turn around and I see, it's a weird image of just this elevator guy and everybody standing there behind him with their masks on, all going like this.
Oh, no.
And they close the door.
He's waving,
and
I was like, since this is radio.
I'm waving. And I'm like, what? And I was like, but my date is in that elevator. And that was it. And for 45 minutes, I just wandered these different environments trying to find her. And to pull in the sexuality of it all, I'm standing in this giant room of anonymous faces. And in the middle is this bathtub and this girl basically doing the most erotic suicide I've ever watched. And then I kind of looked across.
Of all the ones you've watched.
Okay.
I've seen a lot in my time.
I've seen a lot in my time.
Now, for words, a guy who used to run Chuck till you drop.
Shut up. And I looked across the crowd, and I just saw my date. And I was just like, oh, that's pretty hot.
Wow. All right.
Here we are, joined by this weird tableau playing
out.
That's
pretty cool.
Anyways, what Darren's doing with Tension is, I feel like, is greatly inspired by what they did with Sleep No More without the immersive stuff.
Yeah, Darren would always go on about Sleep No More for years leading up to this. There was that and another one that was Alice in Wonderland themed. I think it's called And Then She Fell or something like that. Did you do that?
No.
I heard about that one. It's over on the East Coast, right?
Yeah, I think it's a New York one.
Yeah.
One of the ones that I'm really addicted to is called Alone, which is, I guess you could describe it as sort of the David Lynch version of Blackout, where they do get physical, but it's more psychological, and there's no real narrative to things.
what just went from hi to Ryan?
I was supposed to be really sneaky, but I have to go. Yeah. I have a development meeting, so I'll see you guys.
Bye, Ryan.
Bye.
Somebody's got nipples to lick. Sayonara.
You know what? I'm okay with my manhood.
All right.
I just now picture Ryan going into every haunt and immediately beelining for a guy's nipple.
Yeah. Ooh, nipple.
Hey, I'm really interested in this haunt. Do you have greased up men here that require me to lick their nipples? Otherwise, not doing it.
We now know how he got this position.
Andrew, Alone, was that the haunt that you were calling me about that had the clown waiting for you in the park?
Yes, that was like a special scavenger hunt kind of day.
So I really want us to tell the whole story of how we kind of got into tension. And
yeah,
Alone,
we
want to
hear the backstory because
no one really knows.
Outside of LA,
we
no
keep
one knows.
Kind of like peeking into it. But like with Alone, that was sort of my first introduction to this whole thing. Mm-hmm. Was Andrew calling me going, because he knows I have a horrible fear of clowns. What's it called?
Chlorophobia.
Chlorophobia.
I just gave you the fear of the number 13.
I'm good. I'm totally fine there. 13 doesn't fuck me up.
Found another one.
Clowns, on the other hand, not okay with. So, you know, Andrew calls me to sort of torture me with this story of like, dude, I'm doing this thing called Alone. And he's describing it to me. I'm like, wait, hang on. You signed up for someone to do this. Like, they're calling you late at night and making you do weird dead drops to pick up things while a clown is there waiting for you and laughing.
So wait, Alone did the same thing where it was like having you do certain tasks?
To a much smaller extent than Tension was. Alone kind of starts off as a scavenger hunt where you give them your information and, you know, there's the big event that it's leading up to. But about a week before, you would get a weird phone call, you know, from this institute. And they would... They offer you a clue, and if you solved it, you would go to, like, I don't know, like a coffee shop in Los Feliz where they would have something where you have to say a code word to the cashier, and that cashier would give you a slip. And that would send you to the downtown LA Public Library where you'd have to go down and track down using call numbers to locate a book in the science department, open that up, and there's another note telling you where to go.
It sounds like a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
That's what I'm saying.
Unemployed people love playing these games.
No, it's great.
He's telling me about this, and I'm sitting here, and I'm producing one movie. I'm not married. I don't have kids. Like, I'm too busy to ever deal with something like that. I'm like, what are you doing? He has a child.
Two childs.
Two.
Well, now.
Two
at the time, and a TV show.
At the time, no. And he's working on a TV show, and he's trying to direct things. And, I mean, this is all during Tales of Halloween. So, like, he's doing a million different things. I'm literally producing one movie. Maybe I have a couple other ones, you know, on the back burner. But, like, I'm just concentrating on one project. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, how do you
There's
find,
no what, world to why, be able to do this.
How and why do you find the time?
I don't know. you know, the short answer is it's an addiction. When you start doing it, it becomes a full-fledged addiction, so you make the time.
And I'm going to come back to that line right there because it was after he did Alone, he, you know, whatever it was, like a year goes by, and he calls me up one day, and I'm just going to start this, and I'll let you talk about how you got involved with Tension. But I get a call, a panicked phone call from Andrew just randomly one day, middle of the week, and he's like, dude, are you fucking with me? And I was like, what? No. You know, and I'm thinking, oh, did he find the, you know, dildo I hid in his luggage again? You know, because that's a true story.
Airport security found that. Thank you.
We like to have fun. So he starts telling me that he just went in to this thing called the Tension Experience, where they brought him into a room that had pictures of me, of his kid, his wife, and all this stuff. And, like, a girl got into his car and, like, screamed at him and ran away. And
let's back up.
I'm just saying that I'm trying to piece this together from what you're saying because you were panicked and
I
were,
was
like,
panicked.
Yelling at me going, "Are you, tell me the truth. Are you involved? Is this going on?" I'm like, I have no fucking clue what you're talking about. What's happening?
How does this start? Because you have to also preface, like, normally, like, with the exception of something like The Alone, I didn't know there was like a week lead up until the actual thing.
Well, that's an optional thing.
Okay, so normally there's a night where the main event takes place, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then based on how much you want to interact, like something like Alone, you could do something that starts a week before the actual event.
In the case of Alone and some other haunts do these too, is that you do these little events and interactions and scavenger hunts beforehand, and it's optional, but you can wind up with like a token or a couple of tokens, and during the experience you can present that at various opportunities to the actors, and that will open up a new room or something that people, you know, traditional people who haven't gone through it don't get to see or experience.
Right.
So they're just little bonus cool things that kind of enhance the world, and it gets you kind of sucked in and a little bit more paranoid, because they do fuck with you a little bit like the game, nowhere near what Bousman did with Tension, which kind of consumed eight months of our lives.
Where did you hear about it first? Like, that's the thing, because a lot of people didn't really know. I knew about it through you guys, and then, you know, and then I had a lengthy discussion with Darren.
My very first interaction, because I'm with you, I didn't hear anything going on, and then it was that panic phone call that literally opened up this very strange world. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Tension, I didn't know Darren was involved. Mm-hmm. I hadn't heard of this thing before. I just got a weird email in my inbox one day, and all it said was down the rabbit hole, and it gave and it gave me a link to the Tension Experience website. So I go there, and there's no information on the mm-hmm. website. There's just ominous music playing.
It's
and
got
weird,
like weird graphics weird of graphics. Like clocks. I got the same email.
Yeah,
but,
A
couple of the people in the press did, because I know like Dredd started reporting on it right after that. But yeah, we just all got this like weird email.
I'm sure I deleted that email, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I almost did. I thought it was spam at first. So yeah. I was about to click it. I was like, let's see what this is. So you go to the website and, you know, there's no instructions, anything, but you start clicking around and eventually you can kind of uncover like a little puzzle, and you solve that puzzle and put your email in. And once you do that, the experience is on, basically. So I put my email in. I start getting more weird emails from them. Eventually, through a couple other little puzzles, I unlocked a secret phone number on the website. So I call this number up, and there's this nice woman on the other end, and she's like, "Hello, OOA Institute." And I tell her how I found the number, and she starts asking me, you know, "What's your name? Okay, what's your birth date? Do you believe in God?" And so I answered these things. She's like, "Okay, so we're setting up consultations for next Thursday. Are you available next Thursday at like 2:30? I'm like, yeah, sure. She's like, okay, we'll be in touch with your with the address, and we look forward to seeing you. Best to Annette and Zoe." Click. That's my wife and daughter. So a week goes by. I am like calling and texting everybody that I know in the haunt business, like, "Have you heard of the Tension Experience?" And no one's heard a thing. And then I text Bousman, like, "Dude, have you heard of this thing called the Tension Experience?" He's like, "No, what's that?" and then he starts pretending like he's doing it along with me. You know, he's asking me questions like, "What did you do? Did you solve this puzzle?" Da, 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 da. And I was like, yeah, man. And I'm kind of like, you know, nudging him, and he's totally pretending like he's, you know, totally green and new and excited about this thing.
And I remember when you first told me about it, you told me that you, Bousman, and Decker were like doing it together.
Yes, yeah. So
Bousman's the Kaiser Soze of this piece.
I know, right?
Like, completely.
The director of Saw 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah. And so we're all booked for a consultation. We don't even know what the fuck that means. But I get a phone call that morning at work, and it's this very cold voice. And she's like, "Andrew, be here at 2:30 at this address. Do not be 1 minute late." So I go there, and it's this warehouse in the middle of nowhere. And I'm kind of freaking out at this point, because I don't know what the fuck this is. No one in the haunt industry has heard of this. And I could literally be – you sign a waiver and walk into these things, you're putting your life – and everything into these people's hands. These people could be total psychopaths.
He's literally repeating, "Fuck you. You did not think this going in. You were probably super excited, because when you called me, I was like, what are you thinking? A random number just told you to go down to a warehouse
in downtown LA.
And they know your child and wife's name?
Oh, like, wait, it was in downtown LA?
No, it was
is how people get eaten.
Yes. Yeah. And so, I'm excited, but there's that thing going on in the back of your mind. Like, even when on these things, when they put the bag over your head, the bag is quite common in all these like haunts. It's like, you know, if some psychopath really wanted to just kill a whole bunch of people, he'd pretend that he was running an interactive haunt, yeah. and he could walk us down an elevator shaft, you know, and we'd go willingly. But we go. I show up at this warehouse. This crazy woman greets me, and you know, she starts ranting to me about auras and how I smell like popcorn, and just she's just very strange. And then she's like, "Okay, give me your phone and go into the warehouse." I should preface this by that morning I get a panic phone call from a girl on the other end, and she's screaming, "These people are not who they say they are. Watch yourself. Do not let them take you into the red room." So I go into this warehouse. It's totally empty except for like a table and a couple of chairs there. So I go and I sit down and I wait for several minutes. And then like the office door way in the back of the warehouse opens up and I can see it's a red room. A young girl comes running out crying and just takes off. And an old man walks out and kind of gives me a strange interview where he's asking me various questions like, "What's the name of your best friend's girlfriend and who's your elected official?" And it's just going on and on. And he snaps a picture of me, a Polaroid picture, and writes "mind" on it and puts it down on the table. And so we talk for a little bit more, and he's asking me very strange questions. And he says, "All right, empty all your belongings onto the table." So I do. And then he says, "Go over there to the chalkboard and write the one thing on this table that you can't live without." So my mind is like on my keys. I'm like, "I need my keys to get the fuck out of here in case these people are crazy." So I write that down, and then he's like, "What, you didn't use your mind?" So it was like it was all a test, and I failed like I did every horrible job interview that I've ever gone in. And he starts laying into me. He's like, "You worthless piece of fucking shit. Why? We can't believe we even called you here. He's like, "Collect your shit and get the fuck out." So I leave, I collect my things, and I'm just like, "Oh man, I totally fucked up whatever this thing is." And then the girl who I saw leave the red room is crying and screaming at the old woman in the parking lot. She runs up to me and is like, "Can you give me a ride out of here? This is totally fucked up." So I'm like, "Yeah, all right, fine, whatever." And she gets in the car with me. I drive her. We drive down the street.
So you let the girl you've never met before in your life get in your car.
Yes, exactly.
Did you get her name then?
Her name was Jenna. So she's calling her friend like, "This is fucked. I can't believe I did this. These people are crazy, you know." And then she just tells me like, pull over. Just let me the fuck out right now." So she gets out of the car, and I'm like, "Whoa, wait, hang on. What did you see in the red room?" And she said, "They showed me a picture of you," and slams the car door and runs off. So I'm like, "That's strange." So I go back to work. And I'm working, and then Bowsman texts me, and he's pretending like he's going to go in to do his own consultation. He's like, "You got any tips for me?" I was like, "Yeah, dude, use your mind, man. You'll get through it." And so 30 minutes later, Bowsman calls me up. He's like, "Fuck this. Fuck these people. These people are sick. Why did you tell me to do that? No, fuck this. Fuck this. I'm calling the cops." I'm like, what the hell's going on? He's like, I did what you told me to, man. And they took me into the red room, and they started showing me pictures of my family, of my kid and my wife in surveillance. And they've been looking at me. And he's like, oh, holy shit. The cops are here. This girl just like flagged down the cops, and now the cops are here. And now, like, what the fuck did you get me into? And I'm freaking the fuck out at this point, because literally, I have no clue he's behind this. And I'm like, what the hell did I just get my friends into? Like, these people are really sick. So I go down there. I drive down there to stake out the event to see if I see this girl or any of the other actors that I've encountered before. And I text him like, "Hey, dude, I'm out front. I'm staking out the event." He's like, "Wait, what?" So I'm waiting there for a couple minutes. Some dude knocks on the corner of my car, and he's like, "Dude, did you go in there?" I was like, yeah. He's like, "What happened? I was going to go for my consultation, but I totally chickened out." Mm-hmm. And he wasn't. I don't think he was an actor with the experience. Yeah. But I told him. Suddenly, a guy, like a security looking guy, walks out and starts walking across the street towards my car. Like making a clear beeline for me. So I freak out and I just take off. I'm like, somehow they know that I'm here. and then my phone rings a couple blocks later, and it's the old guy who interviewed me. He's like, "Andrew, our relationship is based on trust." Click.
And at that point, I kind of realized, like, okay, I think Bousman's in on this, and I think I'm like one of his test experiments. And that's at the point I called Buzz freaking out, like, oh my god, like, what have I gotten myself into? This is totally
this is February,
the game.
By the way.
And
yeah.
why
this is February
did
of this
you
year.
Sign up?
Well, okay,
after all this.
So, well, no, when he called me with that. And I don't. I think you called me after Bousman called you. I think it because you said you were going to go down there and
yes.
and scope the place out.
Yes,
because you were at peak. This is fucked up. I'm freaking out.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, if you scope it out, I can come and you know I have weapons. and so you know he calls me and tells me this. And again, I'm the type of person. I'm like I'm like Elric. I don't want people touching me or doing this kind of thing. That being said, I do love. You know, escape rooms and solving puzzles and things like that. You know, I've read every single book on the Zodiac case just because I like looking at the puzzles and trying to figure that shit out. So when he called me about this, I was like, I'm not signing up for something where they bring you into a dark room and show you pictures of your family and surveillance and all this stuff. Not to mention, I don't know if this sounds that this could be real. You know, I don't know. So I was like, I'm not doing that shit. You're fucking nuts. Fuck you. But keep me posted. So he goes on and is doing it for the next like month and a half.
I think it was about you know what I started in February. It was summer when
I signed up in April. I remember because I went up to Idlewild and produced a movie up there and with Blake Regal. I don't know if you guys have ever had Blake on. Yeah. So I was up in Idlewild shooting a movie while, you know, getting texts from him being like, yeah, this, you know, I found this or I went to this little event where I met some other people and, you know, there's people watching us when we're in meetings at like diners and stuff. And I'm like, that's fucking weird. And it wasn't until I got back and I actually had like a hiatus, like where I was not doing anything. I finally had a little bit of free time and I got a tweet from the Tension Experience at the Tension Experience. And they just said, come join the Enlightenment, you know, Buzz Danger. And I was like, I called Andrew and I was like, should I do this dumb thing? Like, I don't know what to expect here, but should I do this dumb thing? And Andrew's like, yeah, dude, you should do it. It's I need somebody to, you know, help me. And I was like, okay, all right, cool. So I go to their website and I type my email in. And I solve, like, there's a puzzle part that you have to do on the site to get you to, like, the questionnaire, which is like a 50 – is it 50 or 100 questions?
There's something like 100 deeply personal questions.
It, like really intense, like, you know, ranging from what are your political religious beliefs to how many times a day you masturbate. You know, like very introspective, like, you know, sitting there answering these questions. So I'm
– lot of work.
I'm okay. Getting to that.
I know which one Bousman asked.
I'm getting to that page. And all I've done at this point is – They have my Twitter name, obviously, somehow, and I gave them my email. So that's all they have at that moment. And I start going in to do the questionnaire, and my phone rings with a no-caller ID. And I'm like, that's weird. So I pick up the phone, and there's a voice on the phone that says, hello, Buzz. Welcome to the OOA Institute. Glory be. Click. And I sat there for a minute and I went, I didn't give my phone number. And my phone number is not online. What the fuck? What the fuck? And the level of panic started to rise. And so I called Andrew going, dude, what the fuck just happened? Now I'll go back over to Andrew. We have a theory of how they got my number.
Yeah. Oh, they essentially, in the months leading up to Buzz getting this call, you know, I'd gone to several other events, and the phone calls and the emails that you get that I was getting was almost like merciless. Like, and the whole idea that I was kind of like uncovering is that the OOA Institute is this cult, and they worship this god Enoch, but nobody knows what this cult is. But they seem to have like this Illuminati presence where, and their history spans like far and wide. You never know who's into it.
Think very much the Illuminati, except like with Cthulhu, Lovecraftian.
Yeah, yeah,
know,
and with David Fincher's The Game, basically. Mm-hmm. And this was a whole ARG experience that Bousman made leading up to the actual event.
And they opened up a forums on the website where all of us players could come and meet and hang out and share theories and basically post like, oh, you got this weird ass phone call tonight? I got this one tonight.
No one is getting the same thing,
yeah,
by the way. Every single – that's what was so interesting about this was that the community on the forums, it was very important that you share everything because, you know, one person – you know, maybe a group of people would get phone calls, but every phone call is different and tailor fit to who that person was.
Yeah.
And what their interactivity was in terms of the whole experience.
And because you
and no one
out,
has paid anything.
No one's paid a dime. And this was been going on for like 8 months. And because you filled out this personal questionnaire, they would tailor.
Oh, this is the tip, by the way.
Oh, yeah. This is just.
This is literally just us getting into it.
Yeah. And because they know such personal, intimate details of your life. They know how to tailor this. Yeah. They know what your tics are. They know where you know how to get you really worked up and make you do things you wouldn't ordinarily do.
Well, the only fun thing I want to interject because you're talking about that is I do recall being like even to this day I don't fully understand it, but I recall being in the room with Bowsman who's trying to explain to me and show me some of these forums and the theories. And the thing that he found interesting is the orchestrator is like, okay, so we left this note at the park that this person got. He's like, but I know that they're leaving out this one piece of information that they're not telling everybody. He's like, and I'm like, why are they
doing
it? Who
got the note in the park?
I think that was us, dude.
No, but we shared everything. We scanned the whole thing.
Yeah, but that's the thing. There were players involved that wouldn't share all their information.
There were.
Which all sounds a little too elaborate and crazy.
And honestly, like the people on the website, we all formed friendships, and we would all like have barbecues or you know go to coffee houses and hang out and just you know theorize about what was going on or what the latest developments were. And the OOA and Darren would here's an example. We threw a backyard barbecue, and we're all
you're
just,
skipping way ahead. Though.
I know. No, this is further down, but. But,
it's fucking up the narrative. I like such a great narrative. Building it up, and
but
to the end.
They would literally show up. The cult would literally show up at our barbecues, you know, and throw a piece of information out there or a package or something, and there would have to be some sort of group decision as do we open it? Who is it meant for? We don't know. And big group discussions. The best thing that I've been able to equate tension to is like you are in Night of the Living Dead. You're in the farmhouse. And a moral decision is thrown into the group, and now everybody's at each other's throats as to what we should do.
It very much like, is, and Darren has described this on other podcasts and whatnot. But it was this whole thing is a live action television show that is happening as you go through it, and is being written as you go through, and every single action you take is literally deciding the narrative for everybody playing and watching. So where, you know, once I got in, it was already like 2 months deep. So I had to spend like a whole weekend just catching up on like going through. And I'd be calling Andrew being like, I'm on this puzzle. Has anyone solved this yet? Because I think I'm about to. And he'd be like, yeah, we all solved that one. It's going to do this. And I'm like, fuck. You know, so it was all the puzzle things. And as you were solving things and uncovering things and finding like newsletters and old videos of like, you know, indoctrination of like old other members, you were slowly uncovering this narrative that a religious cult called the OOA Institute formed many, many, many years ago, and it has been around for a long time. And they started an ARG in Los Angeles called the Tension Experience to attract more members to the cult.
Huh. Yeah.
So literally, you're finding out these things, and you start kind of going, "Oh shit! I accidentally joined a cult."
yeah, it's the thing would break the fourth wall constantly too. At one point the Tension website was taken over because there were a lot of people complaining that they were a little bit too freaked out by what was going on. So then it was taken over by this new PR company, and this guy named Sam was like, "Yeah, I'm the new head of Tension. We fired the staff. And we're going to have a more Halloween themed event to launch with spooky skeletons and goblins, and it's like bring your kids. It's going to be great." And a lot of people like really thought like, holy fuck, is there a corporate takeover? Did he just ruin Tension? And then like that guy's corpse shows up like in the story later on. Why they tracked down Buzz was because through various lines of questioning and events, They made me unlock my phone and give it to them. And then they said, who is your best friend? So I think they got Buzz's phone off of my phone because this cult.
This was like the weekend before when I signed up and they called me immediately. So I have to assume now it's entirely possible. You know, Lauren has – I've worked with Darren before. He has access to my phone number. I mean, there's plenty of ways. But during this time, we don't know for sure it's Darren how this is all going down. So that freaked me out. And then I left town and went to Atlanta with Sean Clark doing a Horrors Hollow Grounds episode, which is currently on Blumhouse.com.
Yes, it is.
And we were shooting out there. And then I got a call from the No Caller ID again saying, hello, Buzz. Are you home right now? And I was like, no. And I don't think he heard me. But the guy goes, look outside. And I was just like, dude, I'm in Atlanta right now. What are you doing at my house? Get out. Get away from my house. And they were like, oh, we'll be back. Click.
Yeah, I got a call at work saying, Andrew, like they're watching you. We think they're watching you right now. Look out for the blue car. So, and I'm at work. I work at a studio, you know, in a big place. No one knows where my office is. So I literally look out the window, and there's a blue car across the street that pulls off and drives away. And I don't know. I still to this day don't know how they got that information.
So the person that called you, was that BOS warning you? Because we have to go into – because there's all – so like I said, this thing is very like in-depth in terms
very
of the whole
dense.
Narrative. I mean this is Lost, the horror version, because of how dense this whole thing is.
So we're all involved with a cult, and then there's an anonymous like cyber group that comes along intent on exposing the cult.
Like literally anonymous.
They're pretty much anonymous.
Wearing the Guy Fawkes mask thing.
And then they start dividing lines between all the players. You know, which side are you going to join because there's a war coming on? And it almost becomes somebody else in the community put this really well. The game almost became like an online version of the Stanford Prison Experiments, where people were given various roles within the cult or the anonymous like group, and suddenly like we're all at each other's throats. Like some people are taking this really personally to where we see each other at like Scare LA and people are shooting you the stink eye from across the room.
Well, that's not why I got the stink eye, but we'll go into that in a little bit. So that started happening. And like, you know, in terms of the OOA, they were promoting people like they were making, you know, someone was a scribe and they would write like that week's events. Because, again, every week something was happening, whether it be someone solved a puzzle that had not been solved before, or they found like a letter in a park, like Andrew and I found a goodbye letter from one of the gatekeepers, as they're called, because there was a certain hierarchy to the OOA Institute that, you know, started with Anok and then went down. Think Jesus Christ, disciples, you know, St. Peter, all that kind of stuff. The gatekeepers were, I guess, apostles, essentially. In a weird sort of way.
They were the heads of the cult.
Yeah.
If we sound like rambling madmen at any point, please let us know.
Yeah. We're trying to give you as many of the details as possible.
Here's an important question. Will this get you in trouble? I mean, is this like breaking Scientology, telling people?
Well, here's the crazy thing.
Very well might.
Yeah. When I first sent my first account of that very first consultation to Rebecca, she put it up on Blumhouse.
And I got emails the next day.
She did. And I got an email from them saying, why did you do that? You have now put Rebecca McKendry's life in serious jeopardy.
Emails I got, it was clearly that somebody knew. Well, that he even said, he was like, we know exactly who you are and everything you do. How are Marnie and Dave? Like, it was the emails that I got were very specific. Like, it was clear that it was somebody who was affiliated enough that knew
that
who I was.
In our circle.
Yeah, in our circle.
Yeah. No, exactly.
And that's the crazy thing is we've been telling a lot of people in our circle about this and about the actual tension experience, which is going on right now in LA. And so many people, like even the most like hardcore horror friends of ours, are almost scared to put themselves through something like this.
Is there a difference between what you guys have been experiencing from all this time versus what you're calling like the tension experience right now? Like if I wanted to get involved right now, is it the same thing?
So this basically
is this like a beta thing?
Well, no. So it's very much think about it like in like a TV show.
Yeah.
Is that him and I went through the first season that culminated into the season finale. That is the tension experience, Ascension.
Okay.
Now, the great thing about this TV show is that you literally don't need to watch any of the, you know, previously on episodes or anything like that. You could go right into the season finale and enjoy the shit out of it. Now, are there things in there that Andrew and I are going to pick up on specifically that other people who hadn't done it. Yes, there's little things for us. It's not taking away from you guys. It's only adding to our experience.
Exactly. It's like over the 8 months, like we got really involved with the storyline and the various characters. Like we grew, we had emotional attachments to some of the players, you know, who we were interacting with on a regular basis.
And some quite the opposite of that. For instance, there was these gatekeepers that were sort of they were counting down. There was Gatekeeper 5, who was kind of fatherly and was like, you know, saying some true things about real life and sort of inducting people into this cult. And then there was Gatekeeper 4 that was like, speak the truth, you know, blah, blah, be who you are, form the community and put it all out there in the forums. And we were all kind of getting into that, and everyone really liked Gatekeeper 4. She was this kind of brassy, you know, loud woman that had like a, you know, sexy voice, and she would call you and say, oh, hello, you know, and things like that, and get you to kind of talk about things. And then she, you know, for whatever reason, they get pushed out because it's been counting down. The Gatekeeper started, I think it was it Gatekeeper 242? Is that what it was?
No, it was Gatekeeper 5.
No, I know. But like when we got that hierarchy that like went through the entire
past.
Yeah,
apparently this has been going on throughout the...
Like a millennia. You
know, yeah, millennia with like 242
the cult goes back many, many years. But then they brought in Gatekeeper 3. Gatekeeper 3 was apparently early, wasn't supposed to be there. And he started changing things with how the forums worked, with how the Institute worked. And while Andrew and I were kind of OA loyalist, if you will, where there was the other sect, the Brotherhood of Seraph, like the Anonymous group, that were fighting the OA, they started to kind of – Gatekeeper 3 started to really fuck shit up for people. And there's all these things coming out about him killing other actors. Within the confines of the game, they're other people. Mm-hmm. Obviously, speaking out of game, they're other players.
Warning calls from people who would say, like, look, I'm an actor within the attention experience. These people are fucking crazy. I'm getting out. Get out while you still can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we would get, like, I would be talking to, like, you know, on the Facebook messenger mm-hmm. with, like, tension. And I'd be like, hey, you know, this thing that you guys gave me, is this coming, blah, blah. And they're like, we're really sorry. Just, you know, the whole Gatekeeper 3 thing just happened. And it's not exactly what we were expecting, and things aren't good here. And then, like, at 2 o'clock in the morning, help me. Huh. You know, things like weird shit like that where you'd be like, whoa. And again, this goes back into it's blending reality and fiction where you really, you know, obviously Andrew and I are kind of going, Darren behind this? But they would then put out something of like, tension, you know, the OOA is hiring Hollywood, big Hollywood players to be the face of things. So then suddenly that makes you go, wait a minute, is that part of it? Like it legitimately started to really kind of mess with your mind. All the while you're trying to solve puzzles and uncover more secrets and truths about this. And so this Gatekeeper 3 kind of starts, and I started being the asshole I am. I started making memes about him on the forums and really goading him and really, you know, calling for his resignation in his head. And we started this thing called, you know, Project Mayhem, essentially, where, you know, Sons of Anarchy, we got a mayhem.
Basically, like, let's take out the motherfucker who took over our cult and is trying to bring it down.
We're going to take him out the back and beat him with a hose.
Yeah, so we're gonna hatch a plan to get him the fuck out because we can't stand this guy.
So we start raising hell against this guy. And all the while, you know, there's, like, the rivalry between BOS and the OOA is kind of peaking. I wouldn't say peaking, but it's getting palpable. I can't even say the word because I'm thirsty. people are starting to get at each other's throats on the forums. And I get a call in the middle of all of this from BOS asking me to join. And I just went, fuck no, and hung up. And then went, oh shit, I just missed a really good opportunity. So then I publicly kind of came out. I just got a call. I said, fuck no, but I've changed my mind. I think I've been too harsh on these things, and there's just, I need to flip. And that was all because I wanted to get in deep and so I could take out Gatekeeper 3. Because they had, BOS had aligned themselves with Gatekeeper 3 through a happenstance of what was supposed to be an assassination attempt, and then they ended up keeping him alive.
This is the moment where you all sound like raving lunatics.
Yeah,
was the precise moment.
And, right and, there, guys.
And you know what's really funny is that's not even the part where I kill someone.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, long story short, Tension sends out a big Facebook thing saying, everyone be near their computers at this time. So we are, and then a Periscope video comes up.
Well, well, you have to preface it with, I joined BOS and basically I was like, hey, Gatekeeper 3, we have to meet. I have something for you. And I got in really good with BOS and kind of was able to play the part, if you will. And then, you know, he was like, all right, fine, let's meet, you little asshole. And then, you know, Andrew, you can tell what.
So we all tune in to a Periscope video. It's totally silent, but it's set in an office, and we see this Gatekeeper 3 guy, and Buzz comes in, and he starts talking, and they share a beer, and they're, you know,
At this point, by the way, Andrew and I have played up that we're no longer friends.
Yeah.
We literally built this sort of
like they've built the wall. You're on the other side. Fuck you. I hate you now. So then they chat, and then Buzz leaves, and everyone's like, that's strange. Suddenly Buzz busts into the office and strangles the guy to death on a couch in front of everybody.
Now, had they prearranged this? Like, had they come to you and said, like, can you do this?
I don't know how much I'm allowed to really, because I signed an NDA, but, you know, it's...
It's violent as fuck. Buzz, it looks like Buzz is really killing this man. Wow. And you can look up the Tension Experiences Periscope videos, and they're all there. You can watch all of this
you
crazy
can watch
shit.
Me strangle a little person.
And even knowing him, you're probably like, wait a minute.
it gave me chills because Buzz.
That's my friend. What are you doing?
Yeah, my good, lovable, chumly friend, suddenly there's a dead look in his eyes as he's choking out this little person on a couch and just staring at the camera. And at that point, everybody who had been playing the game, their brains broke because they didn't know what was real and what wasn't. And like they were scared that tension.
This was the first time within the game that a participant had done something to this. Now there were certain participants had obviously met with other actors, and big things had happened. Like, so one person, you know, had their throat slit in front of a player. So like things like that had happened, but this is the first time that an active participant had an active role in murdering somebody. And the forms freaked the fuck out to the point that they actually had to lift the curtain and say, nobody was hurt.
Cannibal
this was,
Holocaust.
This was the
style.
Safest. Yeah, yeah. This was the safest thing we could have possibly done. It was, you know, no one felt unsafe at any time. You know, we took all the precautions. Blah blah blah. It still wasn't like Darren coming out and saying it.
Yeah.
It was the fake creator that had to kind of like lift the veil. But yeah, it was such a crazy moment that it, like, you know, it's one of those watermark moments on the whole timeline.
Yeah. What's the I'm still trying, so I mean, I totally get this part of the story, but what I don't get at all is like what the part we could do, what would that be? Is it like a place you go, or is it an experience you get into?
So essentially this was all, and we could go on for hours and hours. You could write a whole fucking
book with like
book
your personal
of everything.
Experiences
yeah,
and stories.
Everything that we've experienced, which goes so fucking deep.
Uh-huh. We are actually, I know it sounds long-winded and like in depth, but I'm still just,
we're giving you like the most abridged version possible.
The most abridged I can think
again,
of.
Again, these are daily occurrences with various characters and actors and it just went on
with everybody. And again,
have you had any experiences that it could have actually been something really happening, but you got it confused, like a weird coincidence happened to not be the game?
Yeah, literally
all
like
the time.
Look, it happened today. Like I was walking to go get lunch, and this woman, she was from Greenpeace. She didn't have her actual shirt on, but she walked up to me and she said, "Do you have a moment?" And I was like, yeah. And she's like, "Are you ready to save the elephant?" And I was like, is this some sort of OOA code word? Yes, I think I'm ready to say. Okay, great. Let me tell you all about the white elephants in Africa. Like, no, I don't have time for this. I'm sorry.
Shit.
Like,
you tricked me.
Yeah, but literally,
I'd rather join a cult than help Greenpeace.
Yeah, but literally, like they kept tabs on you so much to where your day to day activities, you're looking over your shoulder. You don't know when an actor is going to come out of the woodwork, find you on the street, call you up. At one point, Buzz got a call from me.
Oh yeah,
it wasn't me. His caller
cool.
ID.
Like
it said Andrew, and then it was Andrew's voice on a podcast talking about me.
Oh.
And I was like, dude, what are you doing? And I just hear click. yeah, so, you know, they called my buddy Buzz, blah, 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 you know, yada, yada. Click. Andrew, what are you doing? Andrew, is this you? No. Click.
Oh, cool.
And I was legitimately, if that one freaked me out, because I called him immediately, and he picks up, and because there's been a lot of talk about Andrew and I being plants, and fortunately, Darren came out finally and was just kind of like, Andrew and Buzz were 100% not plants, but yeah. There was a lot of talk, especially after I strangled a little person.
And intention puts this in every player's head. They're like, oh, you know, one among you, or maybe many of you, are not who they say they are. So,
and there were plants, you know, but that was the moment, the only moment the entire time, because Andrew and I made a pact of like, they can't break us. You know, they like, as long as you and I are in constant like communication, they can't. But that was the one time where they succeeded a little bit in making me question Andrew.
Fucking Rob calls me up that week, and I'm on edge because I don't know who – I can't trust my caller ID. I don't know who the fuck is calling me now, even though – you know. So Rob calls, and I just pick up the phone. Because at this point, every phone time your phone rings, you're freaking out. Every time your email
after
chimes
that, especially
off.
Especially because it no longer was just the no caller ID. It could have been anybody.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's the thing. I think there's like some tension. Special service. Yeah. But
this is like me inviting him over for like Sudoku 3D, and I'm like, don't bring any of that shit to my place. Like,
yeah. My wife is
going to start following me.
My wife is like, fuck these people. I hate them. Like, if they call me, I'm going to murder them. But yeah, Rob calls me, and I freak out. I'm like, God, Rob, you scared the shit out of me. And Rob knows like my mental state at this point. He's like, God damn it, Andrew, I'm not the tension experience. Just relax.
Yeah, it got really wacky.
All this was Darren Bousman and his writing partner Clint Sears. They concocted this whole thing, this elaborate mythology.
Is this public
and ARG.
Now?
Like
it's public.
Public.
Yeah,
it's all public.
We're not breaking anything.
He's taking credit now.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So this,
as far as we know, this could all still be part of the like you know the fake Hollywood actors that have been hired to portray themselves as the creators of this thing. But this all culminated into essentially. You know, the final gatekeeper, like, is the one was all of us, essentially all the voices of the cult, and all of us kind of went to this big ceremony, and then that birthed into what is happening right now, which
so that
is,
was kind of the season finale, and that's,
I guess
that set up Ascension, which is the big event that's going on in LA right now, and essentially that's something that anybody can join, and it's a 2.5 hour experience where you go
tailor
to this location, tailor fitted to you. You go in, and I think groups of eight, but you're separated, and things happen to you. And essentially, the idea behind it is you are going to go into this cult. You are being called there for processing, you know, and
someone's going to be picked
for ascension at the end of the night. So they take all, and even if you sign up for it now, they're going to start investigating you via social media and various other things. So when you go in there, actors know everything about you. They know names of your family members. They know and it's crazy the level of detail with the production design, the script.
The improv, because the thing is too is that it's not just based on like, because you could not have a big social media presence and still go and do this, because there's portions of it where they're going to sit down and ask you things, and the more honest you are, the more like that's going to change what happens to you.
Yeah.
And it literally, I mean, I'm pretty sure Darren said it somewhere that there's infinite amount of possibilities of what can happen.
Yeah. Apparently there's multiple rooms. We went through it once. Apparently we only saw half the rooms and half the characters, but
it's a physical location.
It's a physical location. It's a giant place.
You park and a van shows up, throws a hood on you, puts you inside this van. You drive around for about 5-10 minutes while listening to classical music and being yelled at by the driver not to touch your hood, which I don't know who it was in my van that got yelled at, but it was pretty funny. The guy got really pissed. And then they stop, throw you out of the van, take the hood off, and you're disoriented, and they walk you up to this door, and this girl answers it and just goes, "Does anyone know you're here tonight?" And, you know, you answer, and I said, "Shit, no." And she just looked at me and she was like, "You're serious? No one knows you're here? Anything could happen." And you know, from there it was you know, you go into this thing and you start getting processed, and it's one of the most, to call it a haunt or a maze, it's there's nothing really that describes it. It's a whole new ball game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's part ARG, part interactive theater, part maze, part escape room. Like, there's so many elements to it at play. I can't really define.
And it's not just like there's physical aspects of it where you get pushed, you get whipped, you know, you get your hands dipped in things, you get stuff put in your eyes and in your mouth and in your nose, and like, I mean, it does get physical. But it also gets psychological.
It gets psychological and funny in a lot of places.
There was no laughing for me.
There was quite a few little funny beats and eccentric characters that we encountered. So for me, going through it, I felt like every possible emotion that you can possibly feel doing this.
Could you do it multiple times?
Yeah, well? That's the crazy thing. We're going to go back because even it's
because we didn't get half the rooms.
Yeah,
you know, there's other things that can happen.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, apparently there's 24 rooms. We probably saw each like 11 and 12. But according to Darren, depending on your interactions, depending on how you solve puzzles or what you're able to find in certain rooms, changes the entire experience and where people are dragged to at various points.
This part of it, I know the other part was intense, but is going through this intense like some of these other haunts, or is it a different kind of more playful thing?
I'll say this just because as somebody that
was resistant to this
type of thing. I'm not really a big immersive theater. I like haunts. I'll go to Halloween Horror Nights and Knott's and whatnot. That's fine. You know, it's just like watching a movie or walking through it. I can deal with that. The Blackout and the Heretic and things like that.
Yeah,
it's a little too much. This was in my top five most incredible life experiences. Mm. And I mean that in a way that I came out of Ascension. And this is just all of the indoctrination stuff that we did, which that's what that's called, indoctrination in this sense.
In.
Yeah.
I'm in.
No way.
I'm in.
That was
it. I'm going to do it.
There you go.
Really? Buzz has convinced me. I'm like him. I don't want to be overly.
Don't get me wrong. They do touch you. They do things to you. Man.
It's not punishing like Blackout.
I don't want the psychological somebody yelling at me all the time on a hood and then like, you know, saying they're going to rape my family.
But like,
I can't have that.
A couple of months ago, I did an escape room with Elric and he got like way into that. Like that was
fun.
It was a lot of fun.
And there's a psychological escape room in Ascension. And I don't want to spoil it too much, but essentially you're forced to answer honest questions in order to get things, to get out of this room.
And they put you in very provocative situations.
Well, and this was the moment that actually – it fucked me up. And I came out of it sort of going, I need to really take a moment to look at myself introspectively. And it – you know, I don't think I'm not spoiling anything by saying this because it was my question. But they – essentially, there's a part where they say that you're in a group with a group of people.
That you know or not?
I know these people. For you, you're not going to know anyone.
If you go by yourself.
Unless you go with
someone. And honestly, that's a safety net for us, was knowing our friends.
Sure.
That's why I want to go back, because it being with strangers, it's a whole new experience.
Yeah.
So that kind of lightened it a little bit in certain aspects. But this part made it harder, because if it was strangers, I wouldn't care as much. So it's all these people that I've been conversing with on the forums and whatnot. And then you get this question that was basically, who in your group likes to force their opinions on others? Immediately someone goes, Buzz, can't give it to Buzz. So I'm picked. I have to go up in front of these council of people, and they say, tell the group why you think you're better than them. Now, I am someone that I play the cocky, overly confident type person, because I'm incredibly I have incredible low self-esteem and you know, self-conscious about myself, and I'm not that guy. It truly, you know, in my heart of hearts, I'll play like the ha 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 I got the cock and the walk and you know whatever. But that was a moment of me having to go, holy shit, I have to say something here, and I have to be honest, otherwise we're not gonna get out of here, we're gonna be stuck. And I basically just kind of pulled something that I was proud of, you know, that made me feel good about myself. And then I'm looking at these people as I'm saying it, and they're just kind of like, yep, that guy. Of course, that guy. And it bummed me out. I mean, it made me go, I need to curb something about this. I need to change myself as a person. Because me saying that in those people's faces, seeing me saying that, believing what I was saying was true, because I went up to every single person afterwards individually and said, that's not true. I do not think I'm better than you. That's not true at all. But the fact that they looked at me and said, yeah, that's probably the truth at that moment, made me go, I have to change who I am as a human being.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing is like having gone through this, whether you've done the 8-month lead up or just the Ascension thing itself, like we came out, and this may sound really cheesy, but finding new things out about ourselves psychologically, you know, I realized that when I am put in very extreme situations where you have to act or you're at least given the illusion that you have to act in order to proceed, that I'm very Harry Cooper from Night of the Living Dead, you know, like put your fist down. No, fuck. No. You have to listen to me. This is how we have to do it. And fuck you if you don't, you know. And I never thought that I was that kind of a person.
Yeah. There was many situations where Andrew and I found ourselves becoming the like ultra alpha male.
Yeah.
In a way. Not for the better sometimes. Like sometimes we were not right, you know, and it was overbearing. But at the same time, it was that like, a decision has to be made right now. And if we don't make that decision, like we're going to like this all goes away. We're fucked.
And you all know me. I'm a very happy, chill, lovable person who's just, you know, I don't like conflict, you know, in my day to day life. But when put in these kind of like situations, I found myself being an asshole sometimes, and certain people playing the game still hate me.
There are people that played this game that think Andrew is the biggest like piece of shit, which is hilarious because Andrew is literally like one of the sweetest.
That's funny. I'm a way bigger
piece of shit than Andrew is, and people think I'm nice. And yet they're like, "Oh, Andrew, he's just very overbearing and just an asshole." And I'm like, "What?" have you met him?
It's interesting, like having seen this whole process too with a community, it really gives you an appreciation for what the actual people who pull on these kind of events do. It's because we were kind of seeing firsthand the craziness that they had to deal with and how they had to make changes on the fly based on how the players were acting. And
there was entire narrative threads that were completely dropped because someone didn't solve one clue from a letter.
Yeah.
Or someone held back information from something, you know.
And just the logistics when it comes to like stunts, designs, the various like just all the machinations and the legalities that probably have to go into.
How do you think, I mean, you guys probably know, and if you can't say, don't say, but how do you think this was put together, funded? I mean, I know Darren is just a normal guy. He's directed some big movies, some small movies. Doesn't strike me as someone who has money to do that.
I honestly do not know. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, everything since I strangled the little person has just been a big cover to keep me out of the, you know, out of jail.
Yeah.
But you know, it's
maybe that'll come out after the fact. Like maybe this thing we're not meant to learn until, you know, after Halloween.
Well, apparently there's, based on what happened in Ascension 2, there's more to the story.
Yeah.
Like it's still
that's the crazy thing is tension experience is going to go on for as long as Darren is willing to do it.
So, what is the end game for this? I mean, like is it something that like more people can get involved in?
Go do Ascension.
Like how are they making money off of it?
Well, Ascension costs money.
Ascension costs money. That's the big event and it
may seem expensive right off the bat, but
It's 2.5 hours.
It's 2.5 hours personalized event.
Personalized for you. And something that you will just, that will like strike you to your very core.
And
like
the way you find out about it is on their website or like.
Yeah, the tension experience is where you buy the tickets.
See, the scary part is giving credit card information to a site that seems so, you know.
Like a cult?
Well, luckily they use an official ticketing site, you know, that most of these events do.
That's fair.
So,
It's the tensionexperience.com.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's called Ascension. It's right there on the front page where you can go. And there's also a timeline on the website that you can basically what Andrew and I just sort of kind of briefly went over the last hour. There is a way more detailed timeline of like what's happening. There's one member that's putting together like a Wikipedia page because it's legit. Like you could. There's a full book to be written here.
But even if this is something that's the part that you have no interest in, like fuck this, fine. I don't want
to
research.
You don't need to do mythology
or hear a bunch of Yahoos on a podcast for an hour.
You just heard it from us.
Yeah,
you're fine.
You wouldn't do it.
Yeah, you can easily just go in and experience it as its own trippy psychological thing. I mean, like Buzz said earlier, our
experience was that our advantage was that we knew what this organization was a little bit, and there were certain characters within the experience that we had personal relationships mm-hmm. to. But the way that Darren describes it, I think tension
They're
is going
Easter
to be
eggs for us.
Yeah. Tension sounds like it's going, and I don't want to speak for him, but it sounds like it's going to be an annual event, kind of like Delusion or Blackout or something that they keep bringing back for various installments, you know, once
and,
a year
and,
or wherever.
And it'll be a new. This is what's great about it. Unlike Alone and Blackout and all these things, where it is, you know, it is somewhat tailor fit to you because, you know, what happens obviously to you is not going to happen exactly the same to someone else. But in terms of the narrative and what your actions are doing, that changes it for everybody. So next season, when this thing, you know, when Ascension, you know, people stop buying tickets for it and it closes down, they'll probably start up sometime next year, and it's going to be a new season of this thing. Mm. And it's going to continue the story that's already happened. So Elric, for you, you could join up, you could do Ascension and then start doing the next next season, next year when they do it again. Or if it starts right away, I don't know what his plan is exactly.
Yeah, all we know is that this is not over for us, and how they're going to be structuring this thing, what their ultimate plans are, we don't know. They're about as secretive and as shadowy as the cult itself. But it's the most ambitious thing that I've ever done, having done a lot of these haunts. Yeah. And there's a few I know in the LA area that go crazy. Like Heretic just did recently this one called The Cabin, where you literally go out and stay in a cabin in the woods over a weekend, and all sorts of crazy shit happens to you. Somebody told me that it was that like they had stunt people with that too. And for example, like, there was a part where they're all clustered together like Evil Dead style. There's something outside trying to get into the house. There came a point in the game where they had to send out one of their own to investigate. And so they did. And apparently what they didn't know was that there was a stuntman dressed up as that player that – and they were – that guy leaves.
Holy
they yank him
shit.
Aside. So they're watching through the window as this guy – as their friend is walking out, which is the stunt player. And then they set him on fire.
Oh, holy
love
shit.
Love that. Yeah. That's a good effect.
So it's like if you're with your friend,
your
there's
friends.
No way this
yeah.
guy's a plant.
So I was like, oh my god, they just torched Buzz. Holy fuck.
That's
pretty cool. Pretty crazy.
There's another one that –
what's that one? The cabin?
No, that's Heretic. That was one of their divisions.
That's the Heretic?
They did.
So here's what's interesting is that, like you, Ulrich, like I don't really want to do the immersive thing. Mm-hmm. After doing Tension and really going down the rabbit hole with this thing, I have come out of it going, it was a very interesting religious experience after doing Ascension, and like all this kind of culminated into me, you know, finding things out about myself, like Andrew said. And now I'm coming out of it going, I have to have more.
Yeah.
Like, I have to do more. I want to do Devotion, Creep LA.
Devoted is another
Devoted,
one that I just signed up for, but a friend of mine basically went through it, and it's like Fatal Attraction essentially. Like this,
you go on
crazy,
a date with
this,
a crazy bitch.
This crazy girl contacts you on Facebook.
Your wife lets you go on a date with a crazy bitch.
Yeah. Oh my
well,
gosh.
So, well, according to his words, and that this event has already happened.
Yeah.
He was invited to this girl's house. She met him on Facebook. I really like you. Come out on a date with me. And so he ended up going to her house, meeting her very weird parents. She cooked him a chili dinner, and they sat and ate, and halfway through the dinner she's like, oh, do you really like your chili? Oh good, I'm a part of you forever now. He's like, what are you talking about? She lifts up her shirt to reveal the fresh kidney scar that she just made. That's how in depth and crazy these things get.
I'm curious about these actors and these people involved, yeah. like who they all are. It's so crazy.
And the fact that they're willing to put themselves in such provocative situations. I did one over the weekend called Screenshot Productions called Bardo Thodol. And it was a much more minimalist one, but it's basically based on the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and you're living out your own death in the afterlife and going through the various planes. Huh. And so they put a shroud over your head, they project all sorts of like trippy 2001 images at you, and at one point, and again, you fill out a questionnaire so the disembodied voices know details about your life and question you and kind of like make you reflect on your life. Mm-hmm. And then I hit a state where
I'm like in a plane full of wrathful deities and who are going to tempt me. And I ended up getting straddled by this woman for like 5 minutes as she's like coming on and or like taunting me or various things, and I'm having to like refuse her. And yeah, so the act
having to refuse.
Yeah.
see, Rob's in now, right? Rob, come on.
Come on, Rob.
No.
They're not all nipple licking, apparently.
I'm going to watch my 31 days of horror movies at home.
But this is this,
alone.
This is why it's such an addictive thing, is because as horror fans, our love comes at a price. We are totally jaded when it comes to horror as far as like anything really jolting us these days.
Yeah.
You know, once in a blue moon, something will come along that'll really rattle us, but it doesn't happen much.
Right.
And now this whole interactive theater boom that's come out, it's the next level of entertainment. Like,
with
like,
VRs and interactive theater and immersiveness, like this is what the new level is.
Because it pushes you out of your comfort zone. It puts you in very intense and provocative situations, and it forces you to be more emotional and more human than you've ever been as a participant.
In a world where we're constantly doing this and I'm holding up my phone and looking at it, like this is what this is the world we live in now, is we're all connected. Yeah. The world's very small and it's all becoming less personable. This new level of entertainment of, you know, being forced to interact and get the story to move along by your own actions. You're responsible for what's happening. It's just a completely different level of entertainment that I highly recommend that people check out. Now, again, there's things like Blackout and the McCaney Manor.
McCaney Manor is not even a legitimate thing. That is a sociopath in San Diego who operates this thing out of his apartment.
I heard it's like a torture room.
Yeah,
it's not even, you just get tortured for 8 hours and there's no safe word. And this is the guy that all these other interactive haunt people loathe because they're like, this is not real. This is not art. Yeah, this guy's going to go too far and accidentally kill someone, and it's going to ruin this whole thing for all of us.
Yeah, right. I just googled it, and all these things popped up, and I swear, I wonder how much of it is hype, but I'd never fucking try it out.
I'm never going
to. You know, is McCaney Manor too extreme? Does this one go
too far? Everybody in the
haunt
community,
and he's a big listener of our show, so you know, we dig what you're doing, buddy. Keep it up. don't kill anyone.
For me, it's like those things, and I only bring it up as an example of being the. There's no narrative there. Now, what really attracts me to Tension Experience and things like Devoted is the narrative thread that you can follow and uncover, and your reactions and actions to the whole thing shape the way the narrative is going to go. That to me is what I truly love about immersive theater and immersive haunts, is that I am uncovering this narrative as it's being portrayed to me in real time, and my interactions with it is dictating what this narrative is going to be.
Yeah.
That to me is the next level. Now, someone putting a bag over my head and making me roll around on condoms while I lick a dude's nipple, that to me is not interesting.
By the way, if there's any listeners who are artists, can you please do like an artist rendering of Ryan licking somebody's nipples?
Oh, that's going viral.
If you do it, I'll put it
on
a shirt and I'll wear
t-shirt.
It. Yeah.
I don't think I'd do it alone. I think this sounds to me the best. I am intrigued now. Like, I definitely wasn't when you guys got here.
I'll go with you.
If we have eight people that we know, and so if any of our listeners who are LA and our friends and Jared Rib, any of these people who are into this crazy guffa, I would do it. I would
Jared
go down that rabbit hole
room with us.
Yeah, wow. I mean,
Elric, for you, I would also recommend doing Alone, which they're doing something, I think, on the 30th. It's a one night only event.
Is that the Lynchian one? You
John
said
Humphrey
it's the Lynchian.
Really
it's the Lynchian one.
See, yes. I hated Alone, but I didn't do
you,
the. Big,
you didn't. You didn't,
I didn't
really
do the big
experience.
I did the Scare LA Alone, in which they put a bag over my, or they put a plastic bag around my head, and then they tied a bandana around my eye, so it was all black. They made me listen to a weird British girl talk for an hour and 10 minutes or some shit.
I'm in. The British girl
wandered me around, took the hand the bandana off so I could kind of see his shapes, and then some dude just kind of looked over me, like doing the Ace Ventura thing when he's in the tank looking for Snowflake. Like, that's what it looked like to me. And then they walked me around, spun me around a bunch of times, and then the thing ended and like a song came on. And I was like, that was weird for this to like end with a song. And SoundCloud just ended, and there was no like actual defining climax to the whole thing. So just some dude's random recording that he made in his basement came on random on SoundCloud. So I stood in the middle of Scarlet with a fucking bag on my head listening to some terrible indie rock song for 5 minutes going, why is this a thing? What is happening? And I finally ripped all this shit off and I was like, Alone sucks my dick. Fuck this. I'm out.
That's not a good reflection of what Alone is to me. To me, what I would describe it to you is like, it's like spending time in the Black Lodge, basically. You go into various rooms. And
listening to terrible indie rock.
The craziest thing, too, was having done because Alone was the very first interactive, quote, extreme hump that I did. I walked out of that event that night going, wow, that was amazing. Like, I just experienced all these weird things and got put in these strange positions that I had never thought I would be in. And so I'm walking to my car. It's in the middle of downtown LA.
Yeah.
And there's a crazy homeless dude in the parking lot. He's walking around, like, screaming at the walls and stuff. Like, oh, that guy's nuts. I'm not going to get anywhere near him. I go to get in my car. The homeless dude grabs me and says, oh, you thought you were out? You thought it was over? No, come with me. And he takes me to another building and shoves me in where the haunt continues. So Alone started that kind of...
I do want to actually give it a shot of the real thing, but I do have to say that their Scarlet event, for people that have never done Alone before, you guys did not do a good job of making me go, ooh, this sounds fun. I'm going to have a guy drip water on me and make me listen to terrible music and leave me in the middle of a crowded area.
Well, that's the convention.
On a hot day.
Yeah, that's different.
Yeah.
I wasn't very intrigued. I was kind of more disturbed, but this one sounds more interesting to me. I'm very curious now.
The plot's intriguing to me because it sounds like it's got a lot of
I can see Ulrich coming out of
tension experience you're talking about?
Going down the rabbit hole like these guys?
Yeah. I see you do attention and coming out being like, that was pure cinema for real.
No, I mean, experiential cinema. A new term.
It's existential cinema. Yeah, I mean, if you go on and you want to get more into like the details of indoctrination, the timeline's all there. And of course, Andrew and I are more than happy to help. And anybody listening, if you
they're
guys...
They're trying to indoctrinate.
I know.
Yeah. It sounds like a cult, right?
Yeah.
Has anyone contacted you since you've been here today? Or are you?
No, this is how crazy this thing is. Our phones have been out, both Buzz and I's. We've been eyeing our phones because we don't know if Tension knows that we're here. Uh-huh. And...
They're not going to call, but they did say that they will grab a drink with us.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay, so our experience is actually going to continue
which is probably going to mean that we're going to go somewhere, and then there's some dude in a white coat's going to show up and quiz us on, like, you know, who's lying to us in society and whatnot, and we're going to be like, we just wanted alcohol.
I have a feeling there'll be weird ramifications to this episode. I just have a feeling we're going to post this, and then weird shit's going to happen.
Especially, Ulrich, especially because you said you're interested.
I'm out.
You know what? I hate to say this.
I will say, if Ulrich does it, I'll join.
All right, we'll sign.
I hate to say this, but all three of you, now that you have interacted with us, you are now marked. So Rob, you're going to be hearing from them whether you like it or not.
The look of dejection on Rob's face is so great.
Balisman knows how much I don't want to be a part of this.
I tried to get Rob to come to the escape room with us when we went last year, and he was like,
"Balisman is nothing but a foil. It's James Wan.
It was his creation."
That was the
oh my god,
that was the craziest thing. The other day I was like with James, and James is like, "So have you? What's this thing with Balisman?" Yeah. And I told him a little bit, and he's like, "You're fucking crazy."
Yeah. So that's the thing is that, and like now I'm like going, "Oh my god, people are gonna listen to this episode, and Andrew and I literally sound insane." That this has been this fucking crazy, and this isn't shit that we just like read and we're repeating to you. This all happened to us physically.
I love that it's a director of Saw 2, 3, and 4. I love that it's actually a director who was into these puzzle movies and movies about mystery and stuff. It is pretty cool that that's the person spending all his time.
Clint Sears as well. I mean, they both deserve so much credit for. And from what I know, all of the interactions we had online, like talking to a character or whatnot and on the forums, it was just them.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time it was just Clint having conversations with himself and you know, one other participant. Like, there was, like, the participants talking to two people, but it's just Clint playing two different characters, writing two different voices.
Weird.
Wow.
I mean, it just – that's honestly, like, one of the more impressive things is, like, not only did we do this really immersive theatrical experience that, to me, was, like, one of the most interesting, you know, entertainment things I've ever done – It was just from a filmmaker standpoint of someone, you know, that I deal with logistics and money all the time in what I do, taking the step back and going, how in the fuck logistically did these two guys in a garage figure out how to pull the strings on literally 50 people.
With who have paid no money for 8 months, with more actors than I even know about.
Yeah,
being involved and being roped into this thing.
Wow.
I mean, we haven't even, like Buzz says, we haven't even touched the surface of the main storyline and kind of what we experienced in the mythology behind this thing.
Yeah, we kind of just touched on the stuff that we personally, but there's people that, like, things were happening to them in Kansas City, in Sacramento, all over the country. Like, there was shit going on everywhere.
So how many of you guys did you say were in the test group? Like 50?
I don't know the exact
number. I think
number.
It started off with 50. There's a core group of about
20 to 30 of us.
About 30 people that are like the most active user base.
Well, now that it's like a huge thing and they're pushing like 8 people through a day or whatnot, I mean, is this going to grow? Is it going to be weird now with hundreds of people involved?
Well, I think Darren's plan, and again, I hate to speak for him, but because I don't know what he has planned. But I think he's going to evolve and change things based on wherever it goes in terms of popularity.
And also, I mean, from the get-go, the experience has always said you get back what you put in.
Yeah. The more active you are and the more you engage these actors, the more that they tailor-made things to you. So,
you know, which, you know, it did. There was a few times where people would be like, why didn't I get this thing? And, you know, the simple answer is you're not as active. You only post if something happens specifically to you. And then you disappear for 3 weeks. And then when someone else gets something, you're like, I've been around and posting for months and I haven't gotten anything. And it's like, yeah, well, you're not as active as these other players. So I think as the base grows, yes, there may be 150 people on the forums at any given time, but only 30 people are going to be the most active in that given period.
And again, most people probably don't want to put that time or effort into that kind of thing. So for those people, they can just go to the regular tension events that Darren's going to be putting on.
Well, and not only that, there's tons of people that didn't really do any of the activity stuff, but they followed along. They were just on the forums reading everything as it was happening to other people. You know, think about it as there's 12 survivors and Lost from the plane crash that you're following in the show, but there's actually 47, survivors of the plane crash that, you know, you don't really get to follow, but they're all there experiencing everything the main characters
are. So no matter where you live, you can experience this. You could come fly here just for this craziness.
You can.
Experience it.
Well, there's a couple active members from the UK, from Kansas City, from Sacramento. I've become very good friends with. We have a good buddy in Sacramento named Morgan that I met through this, who's a lovely, lovely guy that, you know, I never would have met him without this. There's actually tons of people in this whole experience that I became really, really good friends with. And even the people that, like, after I, you know, strangled Gatekeeper 3 and, you know, they were mad at me for a while. Once we did Ascension, one of them, you know, came up and it really kind of meant a lot to me, is that she came up to me at like a after tension barbecue and she said, hey, I just want to let you know it was really great getting to know you and I'm so glad we got to do Ascension together.
It's almost like
really
war
appreciate
buddies.
You.
Yeah, where, it's
I was not expecting that from this person at all.
If you don't need any buddies and you don't want to go through this like Rob, we are going to we have our three lists of 31 films.
Oh, yeah.
For those of you who cannot handle this, you can just watch any of our 31 lists that we have now posted.
Yes,
I recommend that.
Or mix them up. And if anyone does any of them entirely, any of our three, and sends proof, I will definitely give you some sort of prize.
We will find something.
I've been looking through my house going, if anyone actually does this, I will definitely. And that's our
and
kind
there's
of
there's
interactive.
Crossover, so it's not really like.
That would be a 93.
No, you can't do all three.
There's crossover, though.
I'm just saying if you do any one of them for all 30 films, that would be enough.
Yeah, we all
to deserve
pieces.
Something cool.
Challenge accepted. Challenge failed.
Yeah.
I already know.
That was a lot to take in.
That was a hell of an experience.
No, don't be
Thank
sorry.
You
that,
for sharing.
That's
no, that
fascinating.
Was
and I think there's probably going to be a lot of people interested in doing this craziness.
Rob,
you will not be one of them.
No.
Lick my nipple.
No.
Come on. That's come on. On air. Let's do it.
If anyone has any questions for Andrew and I specifically, though, just hit us
on the
up
Twitter.
On Twitter.
Yeah.
The Twitter.
Hopefully we made sense during all of this.
No.
Honestly,
there was some crazy rambling there, guys, but it was kind of charming.
No, it makes sense.
I think
it makes
that
sense.
It worked in the context.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm curious, but I'm also like, you know.
I want to see Elric do it.
Yeah.
Well, I'll do it.
Hopefully,
with
Rob will come.
I'll straight up do it.
Yeah,
with
but you guys are that won't be the same. You know what I mean?
No,
because you guys will almost feel more dangerous having you around because I won't know if I can trust that you guys will push it further. I almost want to make sure it's eight people who are untouched.
Yeah,
fair enough. But we'll see. We'll see. All right.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks, guys, so much for coming on and being
thanks
a lot
for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see you next week.
This is our setup for Halloween October. Season.
I only had to join a cult to get onto Shockwave.
Glory be.
We'll have you back.
Glory be.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.